Liberal activists stormed the headquarters of Turning Point USA today, angry after their debate event was canceled at ASU tonight.
Our first stop for our spring tour was set to be this Monday at Arizona State University. That has been canceled by the university.
Fuzz, why are you coming in like this? You know we're doing the show. We're live.
Yes.
I'm literally doing the show right now, dude.
Yes. There's, you know, the UNF America guys. So they're outside right now.
You mean outside at ASU?
No, outside Turning Point.
You know, they call them Sleepy Joe Biden because we could sleep at night. I miss that kind of presidency where I didn't have to worry about my Trump making death threats to sitting legislators or trying to conduct war over Truth Social.
How is that not a possibility?
Because you can't. There's no...
Why can't you?
Because there aren't superheroes in real life. What are good deals that Trump has made for the U.S.?
I mean, just bringing manufacturing back.
It's not back. Manufacturing jobs are down. We have net zero job creation, arguably.
Yeah, that is pretty bad. That is pretty bad.
All right. Well, what's the first topic? What do you want to go over?
Dude, I'll let you take it. I don't really care. I'm
so
open to anything.
Okay. So obviously, the biggest thing I'm arguing with people right now is I think that at this point, I think Kamala Harris probably would have been a better president in almost every size, shape, or form than Donald Trump is right now, measured against almost any policy. I feel like you probably disagree with that. So
yeah, mostly.
How do you feel about the current war in Iran?
Not super pro war in Iran, unfortunately. I don't think you're going to find many Gen Z people that are super pro war in Iran. We don't like to see it. So
okay,
we probably agree on that.
Probably agree on that one. How do you feel about DOGE's efforts and the balancing of the budget?
I think as a concept, I'm very pro what DOGE does. It's funny that the Department of Government Efficiency is so inefficient in its efforts to get that done. But like as it stands, if we were able to make it efficient, I'd be extremely pro DOGE.
Okay, but it wasn't. So
I don't think Kamala Harris would be better at that.
You think Kamala would have spent more money than Trump is right now?
She could have. Is there any way to prove that she
So I feel like have? Solidifying the Trump Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was a big... It's been a huge money sink because we didn't pair that with any spending cuts. I think that was a big initiative that Trump had this last year as part of the One Big Beautiful Bill.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think she would have spent there. And then I guess they're trying to borrow upwards of more than $200 billion now additionally for this current war in Iran. I would say that was probably a thing that wouldn't have been Kamala Harris.
You don't think Kamala Harris would have gotten involved in this war?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
Biden didn't. And I think Israel probably wanted to about as much when Biden was president as when Trump is. Mm-hmm. But I think Trump is a little bit more easy to kind of lead around in terms of
doing. You think he's swayed easily? Easier than Kamala?
Absolutely, yes.
Why?
Because I every time Trump speaks, I feel like I'm hearing the last person that he spoke to, their words coming out of his mouth. So, for instance, he has meetings with Putin, and he starts talking about the arbitrariness between the border of the United States and Canada. That's not a very American talking point. That's a very Russian-esque, Putin-esque take on borders, about the arbitrariness of borders.
But how do you feel about Kamala Harris consistently switching her policy points on, like, fracking through the election? You don't think she changes to fit what people need her to be?
I mean, I think there have been slight changes through her policy platform, but I think it's okay to...
Slight? She was... Anti-fracking, pro-fracking.
Well, it's like anti-fracking, new fracking licenses on certain federally owned grounds or whatever. It's not like she would have turned back the clock on all American energy production or whatever. Like, people like to point out that Trump was big on energy production in the United States, but, mm-hmm. I mean, like, under Biden, we became a net energy exporter for the first time in history, so it doesn't seem like the Democrats were slacking there at all. And then also this weird obsession that Trump has with being super hateful against any green energy. Like, I'm not saying that we need to abandon fossil fuel, but like his policy on solar panels and windmills is like
killing. I just think they're inefficient.
What do you mean by inefficient?
Not as efficient as gas, not as efficient as like nuclear.
Well, but I mean, we can have like a combination of energy things, right? So like in Southern California, sure. Solar can be way more efficient than fossil fuels. In places up north, maybe not as much. But I don't think Trump takes a very nuanced approach to it. He just seems to hate green energy because he thinks it's lame.
It kind of is a little lame.
Is it, though?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Isn't it kind of lame to be dependent so much on the Middle East that now we're seeing gas prices
soar?
Yeah, it's very. So I feel like it'd be less lame.
No Israel, no Iran, no Iraq, nothing. I don't want to be involved in any of that.
So do you think that Kamala would have been just as active in war in the Middle East right now as Trump is?
I think she could have been swayed into it.
By
I
who?
Mean, we're talking about hypotheticals here, but I don't think she's as strong-willed as Trump. I think she bends a little bit easier, and I think she would have been able to be convinced to join this war, same as
What's the thing
Trump.
That like Trump is strong-willed on?
I would say he's strong-willed on almost everything, his economic policy, even though the Supreme Court just struck down tariffs. I think, for the most part, he is pretty strong-willed economically.
What is it? When you say strong-willed, I guess, how do you define that, I guess?
Like he has his policy positions and he typically sticks to them. There's not a lot of flip-flopping with him.
So I feel like on, so when I think of like econ stuff, okay, like I've seen him reverse position on tariffs a ton. He got that taco nickname, right? Because when the bond interest rates were going to go up. Yeah. And then we've seen him, they're now warmer to like, they won't enforce illegal immigration deportation for farmers because farmers are complaining about the cost of stuff.
And, I'm against that. I think we should.
Well, sure. But I'm saying, I don't know if I would consider this strong-willed.
Yeah. Those are just things I disagree with him on. I don't think.
Well, but I think that he came in on one position and then as the winds changed economically, he had to backtrack from all these things. I'm still not entirely sure what the goal of the tariffs are. I don't know if anybody knows what the goal of the tariffs are. They seem to be contradictory. On one sense, he wants to make deals with other countries, but then he says we don't need deals. We can make everything here in America.
I think broadly the goal is to bring manufacturing back to America.
Gotcha.
That takes time, though, and if we have the Supreme Court consistently stopping his efforts, it's never going
to
happen.
Maybe he should work with Congress to do it like he's supposed to. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, but Congress is like dolefully inefficient. They can't get anything done.
Whose fault is that?
I think it's both sides' fault.
Congress.
You need votes from both sides to get things done.
Biden got votes from both sides. Why can't Trump?
Because we have way too many rhinos.
Okay, well that sounds like a you problem.
No, so. I know, but Democrats aren't willing to bend on anything, and so nothing gets done.
I don't think that it can be the case that somehow the Democrats are always to blame, even when Republicans have a majority government.
Okay, so what should the Republicans do in this situation to get things passed?
Anything. Trump doesn't do anything to work with Congress, right?
Yeah, because Congress doesn't work with him.
What does that mean?
How many shutdowns are we at right now?
Four, I think.
Yeah,
I think like so. Just something, this time. Yeah,
yeah.
Like just for this term. But yeah, I mean, this doesn't happen under other presidents. So is it just the Democrats happen to be super obstinate this time, or is there something else going on there?
I think it's largely Democrats being unwilling to work with the Republicans in Congress.
Okay,
I really do think that.
It's not, though. It's just Trump.
How?
Because Trump doesn't even make an effort to work with Congress. When is the last time you heard, like, how many times did Biden have personal conversations with people in Congress about trying to, the West Virginia Senator Manchin. Like, you know, back and forth with Manchin. He had back and forth with McConnell. Like, he was friends. He's known a lot of these guys for a long time. Like, Biden went to Congress and talked to people in Congress to get things done.
Do you think if Trump tried to do that, they'd play ball, they'd talk with him?
Yeah, 100%.
I don't think so at
all. But we don't know because he didn't even try.
Yeah, I mean.
So if you're not even going to try, but Trump, like, Trump came in as the great negotiator deal maker. I don't know what deals he's made.
Part of the deal.
Yeah, but he's the worst deal maker ever, so what?
Worst deal maker ever?
What are good deals that Trump has made for the U.S.?
I mean, just bringing manufacturing back.
It's not back. Manufacturing jobs are down. We have net zero job creation, arguably.
Yeah, we can say
it takes time to bring manufacturing back.
It does take time. So.
But he's not even doing it legislatively. He's doing it via executive action. So all of this could be undone in 3 years.
For some reason, I vaguely remember during the 2024 election, Democrats saying, oh, there's usually a four-year buffer on these things. So all of the woes of the Biden administration are actually the first Trump administration's fault. And now Trump's in Congress, or not in Congress, sorry, Trump's the president. And all of a sudden, no. Every single decision he's ever made is actually what is.
Yeah, I mean, that's rhetoric. We can talk about the factuality of those statements, but I mean, Trump does this as well, right? How many times do we hear he's going to bring down inflation and make the prices go back? And then all of a sudden, when he's an economist, he's like, well, you can never actually lower the cost of things, just the rate of change of the inflation. And so, I mean, I feel like he did that as well.
Yeah.
I guess just backing up, I'm just trying to look at like a lot of the pain that we're feeling right now, I think, as Americans is like self-inflicted for no reason. Like, I don't know why we have to be at war with Iran. I don't know where the crazy tariff policy came from. So when I look at Kamala Harris, I feel like none of these things would have happened under Kamala. I've got 4 years of Biden. She was the VP. I feel like it would largely be a continuation of his stuff. So
economically, what would Kamala Harris have done better?
I think possibly not making permanent the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. I think it would have helped a lot for funding the government. So we wouldn't have to be borrowing such absurd amounts of money. Okay. Number one. Number two, like the absurd amount of money spent on ICE is just crazy. Like if you want to do.
We have a big illegal immigrant problem in America.
Yeah, but there are things we could do to solve that. But Trump.
Do you think Kamala would have been better on immigration than Trump?
Yes.
Why?
Because
she was already doing it. She was the border czar. What'd she get done?
She's the vice president. She can't do anything, technically, right? Okay. But what we would have done is the Lankford bill that was killed in the last year of Biden's term, we would have actually brought that back and passed it, which would have given us like a more permanent solution for dealing with asylum seekers and everybody at the border.
So funding wouldn't be a solution?
Funding could be a solution, yeah. But okay. But ICE does not do, you know, asylum judge stuff. ICE does not fund border security. Like all of the funding just went to ICE, which is driving down support for, you know, broad deportation stuff. So like Trump has taken one of the biggest issues that he was, you know, strong on to now a lot of Americans are looking at ICE going from state to state, just bullying U.S. citizens and stuff. Now they're going to airports like they're this like mob that can do anything.
We're out of TSA agents. They got to go.
Well, maybe Republicans should try to fund. Maybe.
Oh
the
my gosh! How many votes do they need to pass it right now?
They need some Democrats, but they just shot down a bill.
Democrats? Am I correct on that?
Sure. Well, Fetterman's a freebie. That's a free space. So you only need five.
Yeah, yeah.
If you can't get five votes in the Senate, what's going on?
They're not cooperating.
It's just that. Everything is largely the fault of the Democrats. Even when they're the minority. So if Trump doesn't have 60 votes in the Senate, Trump can never get anything done.
It's kind of hard when they don't play ball.
But if I look back. Republicans lost their speaker position in the House under Biden. They lost because they voted out their own McCarthy dude, and then they couldn't even like it was that the Democrats' fault as well? Like I think Republicans have an issue governing. I don't think they can govern very well, and I think Trump is a big part of that. And I don't think Kamala would have had that problem because we don't do these. We actually have to govern as Democrats to bring the country back from the precipice of destruction that Republicans seem to always push us towards or hurdle us over the cliff of.
That's a bit dramatic.
Is it, though?
Yeah, it's very dramatic.
Well, when Obama came into office, we were in Iraq and in Afghanistan, and we had a global financial crash, right? Mm-hmm. And then when Biden came into office, we were just coming off of the COVID, where we were in the middle, the heat of COVID and all that horrible stuff, right?
Yeah.
So that's the last, like, 20 years of presidents. Sure. So I feel like it's not that dramatic.
But COVID wasn't the fault of the Republicans.
No, but Trump's
a worldwide issue.
Sure, but Trump definitely didn't help, and I think he mismanaged a lot of the American trust, and I think he mismanaged a lot of the U.S. response to COVID because of how backwards he was in a lot of his statements. Like, he really wanted people to accept the vaccine, for instance, because he wanted credit for warp speed, but he'd spent so much time undermining Fauci and the NIH that it was impossible for Americans to even trust the vaccine, so.
Yeah, well, Fauci was just not good.
Why didn't Trump fire him then?
That's a good question. I don't know. He should have.
It seems like
he was just
treating him as a fall guy. He didn't even know. He was just, like, right? It's not real. My issue is that Trump can't govern. He's the president. He does everything out of the White House. You just saw Tulsi Gabbard go up and complain that she didn't really say it, you know, directly, but basically, like, the Washington made this decision to go to war with Iran without the IC really didn't have input into that, the intelligence community. I don't think that would have been a problem under Kamala.
I think it still would have been. I don't think she'd be able to govern well either. I don't think she would have been better on any foreign policy position. I don't think she would have dealt with Israel any better than Trump has.
Who do you think dealt with Israel better, Trump or Biden? You know the answer is Biden,
yeah.
Right? It's Biden, right?
That's my main difference from Trump.
Sure. Kamala probably wouldn't have been, because regardless of what you want to say about people on the left, they're more cucked or whatever when it comes to, you know, hating Israel and all that as well, because we've got our own people on our side and loving the Palestinians and everything. I don't think Kamala would have made. There's no way that Kamala would have capitulated as much to Netanyahu, because if she was willing to do that much, why wouldn't Biden have?
She's the vice president. You just said she can't do anything.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but she's part of his administration. I think that their policies.
Sure. So she could have been better on immigration.
No. What I'm saying is that I would expect to see Kamala more or less continue Biden era policies, and Biden didn't capitulate to Netanyahu as much as Trump did.
So if you're saying she would have been better at governing, people were largely rejecting these Biden era policies. We had an election where Kamala got cooked off of these policy positions. How is that better?
Well, I mean, I agree that they were voting against what they perceived to be as bad Biden policies.
Perceived, or they just were?
Well, looking now at the last year and a half of Trump, I would say they were perceived, because Trump has been a disaster in every single way. Because Trump has failed to deliver on every single promise he made. The biggest ones were affordability.
Okay, you can say Trump did bad, but that doesn't change the fact that Biden's were also bad. Trump being bad does not make Biden good.
Correct, but Trump being worse than Biden makes Biden better than Trump, and by extension would have made Kamala better than Trump. And Trump has been about as bad as anybody could have imagined on almost every single issue.
Nah.
No?
No. He could be better. I'd like him to ramp up. I would like him to ramp up immigration or the deportations, but border secured. Has the border ever been this secured?
I don't know what I don't know if I can trust the numbers that this administration even gives.
Oh, so the one good thing he does, you're like,
well,
so I don't know if I can trust the source. What would you trust?
Well, hold on. Do you think that we've had zero illegal crossings in the past year? Do you think
possibly
we've had zero? Do you think we've had
zero? Maybe there's some that they didn't see, but
do you think we've had zero illegal crossings the past year?
Probably pretty close.
So no.
Probably pretty close. Yeah, give or take.
So no.
Dude, we're talking about like a handful of people have
like
probably
six.
Made it over. Maybe, who knows?
So no, we haven't had zero. Trump says zero, doesn't he? Trump says we've had no illegal immigrants crossing. So that's a lie, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Not a lie, but
what's a lie?
No, it's not.
If you say zero and the number is not zero.
Prove it's not zero.
I know 10 illegal immigrant friends who illegally immigrated 6 months ago just for the fun of it.
Just for the fun of it?
Yep.
And they just weren't caught?
Yep.
Okay, so once they get caught, they'll be deported
again. They were
again.
Seen, though, so they were reported as an encounter, but then they ran away. Okay. I just can't believe that the number is actually zero. That just seems impossible to me.
I don't know what the number is. It's lower than under Kamala and Biden.
I'm sure it is. I believe that.
Okay, so that's a good thing.
Yeah,
is it not a good thing? Are you pro illegal immigration?
Am I pro a thing that's against the law? Generally, no. I'm not pro illegal immigration.
Okay.
I don't think many Democrats are pro illegal immigration.
Okay.
But I think that like actually solving the problem, I think would be better than paying lip service to it.
What's
like
actually
Trump
solving
has.
The problem?
Well, I think the border bill would have been nice because it would have provided funding for the asylum judges, so we could have worked through that asylum backlog. I think that fixing the asylum seeker system we had, because I think it was a little broken, especially when
it was horrible. Catch and release was a horrible.
But it was a necessary byproduct of our asylum system. Right, people would come in, they would claim asylum, and if you don't have the judiciary to
send them back, they can wait in Mexico. They can wait in wherever they came from.
What if it's a legitimate asylum-seeking person, like a person who's actually come from an area where they're being heavily prosecuted and they can't afford to feed their family? Like, you just send them across the border to die?
No, but that doesn't give them the free rein to come into this country, does it?
So then do you send them back across the border to die?
No, but we as America can't take every single person who needs to come into this country. There has to be a system, and if we let people start skipping that line, why can't everybody skip the line?
I agree with you, which is why the system needs to be funded, which is what that border bill would have done. Trump didn't fund that system. He just shut it all down.
Yeah, because it was a horrible system. It needed to be completely rebooted.
Wouldn't it be nice if he did that instead of just shutting it down?
What's nice is just securing the border so we don't have these issues.
Yeah, but he hasn't even really secured the border. He's just done some things via executive order that could be undone by the next president via executive order. Like, wouldn't it be better to have an actual comprehensive immigration bill solution, like an actual real-life solution thing, rather than Trump ruling exclusively via executive power? Like, anything...
But once again, we're getting back to it. Yeah. Would Congress work with him on that?
He's the president. It's his job.
I know. But if Congress isn't going to play ball, he's got to pass it through executive order.
Then make the case to the American public and tell them that Congress... It's not... Trump didn't even try... Trump literally told Congress not to vote on this border bill.
It's also just quicker to do it through executive order.
Yeah, breaking the rules usually is quicker.
How is an executive order breaking the rules?
Well, you're either trying to do more than you have the legal authority to do, or you're doing a half-assed job
The executive order give him the legal authority to do that?
No.
No?
No, that's not how executive orders work. No.
No?
No. Executive orders are things that the president's just saying that this is what he wants to do as part of his administration's agenda, but it has to use pre-existing powers given to him by Congress or the Constitution. He can't just make his own law.
Yeah, but he can enact policy through executive order. That's what he's done through this entire administration.
A little bit, but it's not strong. It won't stick. There's no more additional funding for the asylum judges. But then
every time we try to fund, there's a big holdup in Congress, and we shut down our government.
Well, he's not trying to fund a legitimate overhaul of the border. He's just trying to give $90 billion to ICE for some reason, which is an absurd amount of money.
Yeah, it is, but we have an absurd problem in this country illegal immigrants. Yes. Yes.
I don't believe it. I don't believe
you guys
don't
believe
that? No.
You don't believe that?
No, because I think if it was an actually huge problem, I think you guys would be infuriated at how lackluster Trump's approach has been to it.
I think a lot of people have been, but it's better than what Kamala would have done.
I disagree. I think they would have passed that border bill, which would have done everything Trump has done now, except it would have been solidified in legislation, and it would have prompted more, I think it would have prompted more funding for, like, more actual changes to the border and then more long-term funding for dealing with it. Trump said that there were 30 million people that came into this country illegally. Okay. And I think, according to their numbers, like 2 million have left. So that's, if they do the same amount for the next 3 years,
so
that's
think,
8 million
think,
out of 30 million.
Yeah, what do you think Kamala's numbers would have been?
Well, I don't think 30 million came in illegally. I think that's just a total lie.
Okay, let's set it at 15. Let's say it was 15 million.
I think it was like,
I think
I've heard anywhere
number.
From 3 to 8 in terms 3 of like
to
asylum seeking. Yeah.
Oh,
but even the
just
fact that
asylum.
You're willing,
okay.
But
yeah.
The fact that you're willing to go from 30 million to 15 million, isn't that like a big problem that the president of the United States is lying so much about the number? Isn't that kind of crazy?
Well, we don't know what the actual number is. It could be 30 million. He might. He probably has better intelligence on it than us.
Yeah, but it seems like he gets his intelligence from Fox News.
No, I don't think so. You just said it was the last person he talked to. Wouldn't that be his cabinet?
No, but he doesn't talk to his cabinet. That was what Tulsi Gabbard was saying, was the decision to go
and
invade Iran.
In this one instance, he didn't talk to his cabinet.
I mean, when you look at the whitehouse.gov website and they're releasing new articles on things and they're sourcing like Fox News and stuff, it makes me think that, or OANN or the Newsmax.
American News.
Yeah, it makes me feel like they don't seem to be relying on their intelligence too much.
I mean, but it is journalism, is it not?
Sure, but he's the president of the United States. He's got access to better information than all of us. Well,
sure,
what if
what if they're not declassified? What if they can't say where they got these from?
Sure. Well, they could. It's the president. He can declassify stuff. That was the Mar-a-Lago hidden documents argument, right? Yeah. So I guess, okay, so because we have to move through different topics and people.
Yeah, yeah, that's okay.
So I'm just curious, though. I'm looking across these wide measures. I don't think Kamala would have capitulated as much to Israel. I don't think Biden did as much to Trump. Do you disagree with that? You think she would have given?
Oh, I'm just not pro-Israel at all.
No,
I'm not pro-American involvement in Israel. So
sure.
Yeah, I would say Biden probably was better on the Israel topic because he just did nothing, which is...
No, he restrained them, right?
Sure, but he was more focused on the Ukraine-Russia conflict during his presidency.
So I think Kamala would have been better there. I don't think Kamala would have tariffed the entire world like Trump has done.
Sure.
I
don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but that wasn't her position, so she wouldn't have done it.
Okay. I don't think that we would have solidified the Trump tax cut, so I think the budget would be doing a little bit better. I think the Trump budget is just completely out of control.
I think our government is broken. That's why I would like Doge to come in and actually be efficient.
Well,
I think there's places we can cut.
There's not.
We can cut spend. There's no places we can cut
spending.
Not
with Doge, no. We would have to actually make hard spending cuts, not discover imaginary efficiency and waste or whatever that we think is going to account for some huge reduction in spending.
So what department should do that?
All the departments do that, but this is a
they're clearly not.
Well, this is a Congress question, is in what do we want to fund? Do we want to increase revenue, or do we want to cut spending in certain programs? But it's not going to be some magical waste, fraud, and abuse theory that finds all this extra money to not spend.
There's a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse in the government.
No.
You don't think there's that much?
No. If there was, why didn't Doge find any of it?
They have been fined.
They have been. Their only cuts were getting rid of USAID and...
Nick Shirley goes to Minnesota...
And finds nothing.
He didn't find nothing.
He got
Tim Walz to drop out of the race.
Yeah, that's true, because of propaganda, but he didn't find anything. Where are the cases?
Propaganda.
Where are the... You understand... For half the Nick Shirley videos, this guy walks into managerial offices and seems to think that this is the same thing as a business and doesn't know the difference... And says, like, why can't I sign my grandma up for hospice in this, like, one-room office? It's just a managerial office for, like, a hospice-at-home company. This is, like, 50% of his new California video. It was 50% of his Minnesota video.
I haven't watched his new California video.
Okay, well, in the Minnesota one, it was the same. He was going to daycare centers at different times of the day, sometimes when they were closed.
And they're spelling learning wrong.
Sure, the sign was spelled wrong on one of them. But, I mean, Hegseth literally incorrectly spelled, was it the Department of Defense or whatever? Like, it was literally right in front of him on a placard. And Trump can barely name correct countries or anything, so I don't know if that's the position that the Republicans want to be making fun of right now. But okay, I don't know. I think Kamala would have been better on almost all these issues, but obviously you disagree. Any final? I'll give you the last word.
No, Kamala would not have been better. She would have bent to Israel, I think, just as hard as Trump would have. I think this was a bubbling conflict that was going to explode regardless of who the president was. I don't think Kamala Harris has the sway with leaders because, frankly, people aren't afraid of Kamala. I don't think they respect her like people maybe. I don't think it's the kind of respect that maybe we would want our president to have, but people are afraid of Trump. They're afraid of his power. Kamala didn't have that.
Okay. Hey, what's up? What's up? It's going great.
I'm Nathan. I'm with Off the Record USA Media, and I am an influencer for them.
Gotcha. Awesome. What is there a specific Trump topic you wanted to talk about today?
I really loved you talking about and comparing Kamala Harris because obviously she was the candidate against Donald Trump. I think some of the main components of the campaign trails on both sides were economy, because obviously affordability is a big issue for us voters. Immigration is a top issue as well, according to polling across CNN and Fox News. And if you want to talk about war, we were involved in the Ukraine and Russia war for a while now, even till this day. And I think voters were very afraid of to continue and prolong the war and also get involved with Iran, which I heard you discuss about, which I'd like to as well, because I heavily disagree with your side and your standpoint.
Gotcha. So I guess starting off on the affordability thing, like I don't think I remember all three of them, but Kamala had three big components that she had outlined for economic stuff. One, I think, was like a $20,000 first-time homebuyer tax credit.
Correct.
The second one was some tax deduction for small businesses up to a certain threshold. And then I don't remember the third one had to do with a child tax credit or something different. But these were all things that ideally would have gone to some extent towards affordability. I feel like Trump's bids towards affordability have been kind of jokes. So like no interest on, or no, like you can deduct the interest that you pay on your car payment, which
yep.
is, I don't know how much.
Only if it's an American-made vehicle.
Yeah, but this is like an insignificant amount of money, I would imagine, to the vast
right.
majority of
and
people.
And the idea of that policy as well is to buy American, so American manufacturing would do better, because like companies like Ford and Dodge, he's trying to push them to come back here.
Sure, but I feel like the needle.
Manufacturing earlier, according to some organizations and news sources, they do say in some areas of manufacturing have doubled to tripled. Obviously, some have gone down. Like chips and stuff like that. We do a lot of those in Taiwan and stuff, and we want to sort of bring that here. Obviously, they're struggling doing that, but there are some manufacturing sectors that are doubling and tripling. Vehicle manufacturing is one of them. He wanted to bring back manufacturing of vehicles in Detroit because Detroit kind of has nothing. They used to be the hotspot for vehicle manufacturing. I'm sure you know that. It's very well known. He wanted to do that. But there are companies like Ford vehicles, American-made vehicles, that would be coming back here. So manufacturing coming back here, more jobs here for that. And, again, us Americans, we would be buying Ford products because we get that stipend off of the interest rates, which they're very high.
Well, maybe, but at the end of the day, I don't think anybody's ever making a decision to buy a car based on a deduction of their interest payments on their car.
I think everybody's looking for deals right now. $5 off is enough for me to buy if it's
a different type of car.
There's
no world where it's like I could get a Mustang or I could get a Subaru or some other whatever car you would compare to a Mustang, but like because I can deduct and save $25 on my taxes, I'm going to go with the Mustang.
I think it'd be slightly more than $25, but I think when you go buy a vehicle, we all know they like to add on little fees here and there. They add on a fee for pulling up the vehicle for you at the front of the building. If you can take off $500, I'll take that all day long. Anything I can take off the cost of a vehicle, especially from a dealership, because they gouge you insane. I think anything works like that.
I would agree with like line items on a car, but not on the interest rate, not on tax deductible. I don't even know if you get this with your ordinary filings or if you have to itemize for this. But like, there's just no shot where somebody's thinking that like how much interest would you even pay on a car? Like in a year, like let's assume you're paying, we'll say $200 in per month. What is this, $2,400? And then you knock $2,400 off your taxable income. So maybe you save maybe a couple $100 depending on what tax bracket
you're in. Like, throwing a speculation number. I mean, it's
I know, but I'm saying that. But imagine the average person going to buy a car. Like, are they really crunching the numbers at this? I don't think so. Or like no tax on tips. Like why would we have tip workers not paying taxes or
no tax on tips and no tax on overtime?
Overtime. Yeah.
Me personally, I when this was enlisted, I still have my taxes that are about to get done because I worked a lot of overtime in warehouse industries and stuff. That's going to physically affect me a lot. I'm going to be receiving a lot more taxes back according to Credit Karma and these systems that I'm doing my taxes through. So I myself am seeing something great through that. I'm not upper class whatsoever, so I'm seeing a beneficial thing from Donald Trump's policies. The no tax on tips, people think, oh, well, you get cash tips, that already matters. Well, also, it's taking from credit cards to actually not taxing that because credit cards are considered tippable items, and that's tracked. So the IRS is taking that from you, so now they aren't actually.
Sure. So I'm seeing a bunch of like kind of bones thrown, I guess, in ways that are like kind of maybe a little bit nice, but overall, like, I mean, like the inflation outlook keeps getting worse and worse. Like, we never got even below 2%. We've got the cost of gasoline is now exploding for who knows how long due to the war in Iran. We were never able to lower the price on anything, obviously, because the prices won't come back down.
Yeah.
So all the cumulative effects are still felt. I feel like Trump, like, if we want to make nuanced arguments about what the president can do regarding affordability and prices, that's fine. But none of those arguments were made during the election.
It's also not what he can do. What has he done? Because obviously we can't argue whether or not Kamala Harris would do good or bad because we can't see her actual policies enacted.
Sure.
But we can say what her policies are on her campaign trail. One of them also was being price control. And we both know price control is not good. Supply goes down. Demand is high. That's going to affect the economy very, very bad. And consumers like me and you are going to be grasping for straws for certain products.
I agree on that, but I'm not as worried for Democrats when they say things like that because I know those policies are stupid and they'll listen to their advisors and they won't enact them. Whereas on Trump, if it comes down to tariffing the entire planet, like that is a thing he'll do, which has downstream really negative effects on consumers. But Trump obviously won't listen to anybody around him, or he just surrounds himself with yes men. So now we have this disastrous econ policy, whereas I don't think for Kamala we would have had the price control stuff. I don't think that would have ever.
So Trump's campaign policy was benefiting the working class. Kamala was also stealing Donald Trump's policies, like no tax on tips. She stole shortly after him, 3 months later after he announced it. So her policies are taking what Trump's ideas are and lying then?
No, I think that, the particular one about, like, there was another one about, like, unrealized taxes, like capital gains taxes they were talking about. I don't think that these would have actually gone through just because I think they were so disastrous. But I think the general Democratic outlook on the economy, so not extending the Trump Tax Cuts and Jobs Act to, like, things to help the budget a little bit more, or not, like, throwing us full force into a war in Iran.
You think she wouldn't have done that?
No, I don't think so.
Why is that?
But I guess, like, before we can go to Iran, but, like,
sure.
All of the – I don't know how Republicans or Trump or anybody keep getting this credit for, like, balancing the budget when like the deficit and everything keeps getting larger and larger and larger, and they do nothing to curb any of it. But then they get credit for helping Americans because they are, you know, giving like this, like the no tax on overtime or tips thing. But like, it's all just massive deficit spending, where if a Democrat were to do the same thing, there'd be complaints about inflation and everything else.
How is that deficit spending when it's just saving the American taxpayer money, which means they have more money to put back into the economy? I'm not saying that Donald Trump doesn't raise the deficit, because I think we all know here Republicans are just prone to raising the deficit. I think it's just a requirement for them now, it seems.
Yeah.
Like. Can we agree?
Well,
on
when
that?
I say deficit spending, yeah, for sure. But when I say deficit spending, what I mean is that like the government is spending a certain amount of money and now it's reducing its revenue, so it's going to have to borrow even more. So it's just more deficit spending. Like if you were to say tomorrow we're going to do 0% income taxes, you would have to this is powered by deficit spending. You'd have to deficit spend even more to cover now all of your lost revenue. So like all of the distributions that Trump is doing to the American public via tax rebates or tax deductions or whatever, they're not being paired with any spending cuts. Like DOGE was a monumental failure, and he hasn't cut the budget really anywhere. And
what do you when the American taxpayer receives more money, what do you think they do with that money? Do you think they just set it aside and they save it, or do you think they spend it?
I think they spend it.
What do you think they spend it on?
Anything, goods and services. Depends on the class, but...
Right, it's going back into the economy. It's going back into state-level economy as well.
Yeah, but that doesn't go into the government budget, right?
Well, absolutely it doesn't go into the budget, but I'm saying it still goes back into the economy, or it goes back to the government in some sort of way, shape, or form. So it's not just disappearing. It's not sitting in a bank account and losing value, diminishing every single year. It's going back. That's the main point I'm making.
Well, I understand that, but like, if Democrats were to just say, we're going to cut a $5,000 check to everybody, would you say the same thing?
Well, that's different.
It's the same thing.
It's different when the government is directly handing you money, or it depends on how much you make.
No, it doesn't. It's the same thing.
No, it depends on how much you make, because you look at the no tax and overtime, no tax and tips. You have to receive a certain amount of money per year. If you go past that that threshold, then you know you're not eligible to make that and receive that tax.
Yeah, I understand. But at the end of the day, like you can do it however you want. But at the end of the day, the government is receiving the deficit is measured in revenue against expense. And if you want to increase the expenses by giving everybody a check or reduce the revenue by offering whatever arbitrary tax cuts, you're just increasing the deficit. You're just deficit spending with the government at the end of the day. Whether the Democrats want to give out money or whether the Republicans want to cut taxes,
yeah.
If you don't spend it with, if you don't pair it with spending cuts, it's just deficit spending.
Do you think it's fair to say that we should give us, not us, sorry, us working class, when I say us, I mean working class people, you know, lower income, do you think it's fair to say to give them more of a tax break than the big elites?
Not necessarily. I think everybody should have to pay taxes in the country.
I'm saying the people who are working should get more of a tax break than the rich. You're saying the rich people should get more tax break than the poor class?
The
income makers, the workers?
Well, no. I'm in favor of progressive taxation. Like, I think that the more money you make, you're in
so
a higher
yes,
income bracket.
You agree, then?
I think I do, yeah.
Okay, so the point I'm making is
Well, but if you say give them a break, I just mean the tax rate should be lower on the lower income level than as you get higher and higher, there's a higher marginal tax rate.
It already is for these specific policies. When you go no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, again, there's a threshold you have to meet. If you pass that and you're making a boatload of money, you can't receive that that policy program for you to help you. It's
sure.
For the lower class people so they can get a break, can continue to work and save more money, while the upper class is already paying the most taxes according to the IRS. They already pay over 70% of taxes already, so they're
sure.
Paying the majority of it.
I understand that, but I'm just saying that regardless of the cute little tax exemptions that he's making for certain classes of worker, if you happen to be able to get overtime, if you happen to be able to work a tip position, that at the end of the day, this is just deficit spending. He's just spending more money and not taking any money in to match it. Like, you can figure out how you want to distribute it via tax cuts to certain people or via cutting checks to people or whatever. But I mean, like, the deficit has been a problem, right? Like, Trump has been a disaster.
How do you think Kamala would have lowered the deficit according to her campaign policy? What does she say she wanted to do for it?
My hope would be that Democrats wouldn't have made permanent the Trump Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
What did her campaign say about it?
I don't know if they spoke specifically to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
No, the deficit. We both agree the Republicans raise the deficit all the time, but what did Kamala run on for the deficit spending?
I don't know if they spoke specifically about deficit spending.
Okay, so we don't know what she would have done then.
Well, but I mean, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act from Trump is one of the hugest drivers of our, like, massively increasing deficit. Like, it cut all the rates for how much money we could make from people via taxes in the U.S.
Sure, but again, she had no campaign. I mean, okay, we can both agree her campaign didn't start until later on, so maybe she didn't have enough time to get a policy put out there for it.
Well, do you think Democrats would have pushed to extend the Trump tax cuts as much as Trump did?
Probably not, but there's still some programs like tariffs that they probably would have extended.
They would not to the extent that Trump is doing.
Not to the extent, but still continued some. Like, Biden still continued.
Sure, some of the ones on China.
Yeah. But again, yeah, and we did bring up other topics, but it kind of led into economy as well. So
yeah, okay. So why? So you think the Iran push would have happened under Kamala, or you supported it under Trump?
100%.
Why do you think that?
And again, like I said before, I'm not debating whether or not it would be better or worse under Kamala. I'm just saying that it would have happened. Do you know what Kamala's campaign policy was on Israel? I'm sure you can assume.
I mean, I've heard there are like collections of snippets that people like to say, or what do you like? I've heard that like we have to have the most lethal military in the world, and we have to be
Not our military. The Israeli support her campaign policy. Do you know what it was?
I don't know. They're strong allies. What?
Strong allies, and it was also defending them physically with manpower. So again, if Israel's being attacked, October 7th, if Israel's being attacked, Kamala's not going to sit back and do nothing. She's going to get involved with the war, whether it means physically being there with troops on the ground, which I don't think she would do. That's very stupid. I don't think she would be advised to do that. But again, she talked about defending Israel was her campaign policy. So that's exactly what Donald Trump's doing, is claiming to doing. Marco Rubio is talking about defending Israel. This whole thing in Iran is about defending Israel and claiming also weapons of mass destruction, which they did in Afghanistan years ago. But they bombed the nuclear facilities in Iran is what Trump did first. And then now they're bombarding with bombs. I think Kamala Harris would have done virtually the same thing. Like I said, not better or worse. We can't gauge that. But she absolutely would have been involved because her own campaign policy said she would be defending Israel.
So I think that defense can look a lot of different ways. Like Biden defended Israel, but Biden also restrained Israel's military actions, especially in the Gaza Strip, at multiple points. And when Iran was threatening and shooting missiles or whatever at Israel, Biden was not like, let's go B2 bomb all of their stuff. And then now, to the extent that we've got thousands of Marines headed to Iran, like I don't know if they would have taken those steps. I don't know why they wouldn't have just done it in their term. Like Biden, I don't think would have ever gotten to this point for Iran. I don't know why I would think Kamala Harris would ever get to this point. Like, I think it's a pretty exceptional.
Again, yeah. Again, we can't really gauge whether or not she would be better or worse, or she would be more excessive or less excessive, but can you concede and agree that she probably would be involved in Iran defending Israel in some way, shape, or form?
Well, yeah, but we're not defending Israel right now. We're launching a regime change war in Iran.
Yeah, but you agree that but Kamala would have been involved in some way, shape, or form. We can't gauge how that
Biden was involved in some way, shape, or form, right? For the defense.
Would Kamala be?
To some extent,
would
Kamala
be?
Yeah.
Okay, to some extent, thank you. Okay.
But not invading Iran. Or not doing a regime change war in Iran.
No, of course, but like, I'm just saying we don't know she would have done something like that. We don't know what she would have been advised
to do. We can't actually know everything, right? But I mean, like, we can make guesses based on Trump has bombed like more countries in like a year or two than I think any president in all of U.S. history just in the short couple of years. Like nine different countries that he's attacked.
Well, and then, I mean, we could bring up drone strikes in Obama and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I mean, you can bring up anything
the ones that
like
Trump
that.
Obscured more of for the reporting related to drone strikes. But
sure. I mean, how many U.S. civilians did he kill? How many civilians in general did he kill? How many hospitals did he blow up with children and women inside of there?
For Trump? Well, we just bombed one in Iran that had like 170 school children or
how
whatever.
How confirmed is that?
It's 100%.
Is it? I've seen...
Well, it's either you believe that the U.S. did it, which is, I think, what New York Times and most people are reporting, or you believe Trump when he says that somehow Iran stole a Tomahawk cruise missile and directed it at their own school children.
Well, again, but there's also the hands of saying, could it have been Israel involved with that, or could it have been a misfire under Iran as well? It's not uncommon for these Middle Eastern countries to bomb their own people or gas them and say that somebody else did it. Right? That's not uncommon.
I think that's...
That's not
uncommon in this way. This would be very uncommon, yeah.
I think these crazy people over there, these leaders, are willing to do anything to gain support from its own people to take arms and join
them. I think not for this one, no.
Why?
It just wouldn't make any sense for them to accidentally bomb their own school with 170 children. It obviously doesn't look like...
Why not?
It just doesn't make any sense. You just can't give me a plausible thing. So after Soleimani was assassinated and Iran wanted to counterattack, they accidentally shot down one of their own planes, a civilian airliner over Tehran. But it makes, like, I can conceive of the fact pattern there that their radar systems kind of suck and they mistargeted a civilian airliner. You can see the missiles, like, it was them 100%.
Yeah.
But the idea that, what, like, Israel from an F-35 or they from their own country bombed a school that was literally right next to a whole bunch of other targets that the United States was attacking that day, it just doesn't make any sense that...
This is a good one. Mm-hmm. Is it uncommon that Israel bombs civilians?
In this way, yeah, I can't think of an example where they're just targeting a school and shooting and blowing up.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. They bomb Christian Catholic churches in Gaza all the time. They bomb schools.
Yeah, but this is like a part of a larger military campaign where, at the very least, whether you believe them or not, you can make the argument that there are people, that there are Hamas or whatever, that are people that do fight out of these buildings.
Yeah.
You know, Amnesty International, everybody said so.
Cowards, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think the same claims are generally made about Iran or the IRGC to bomb the school. It looked like it was a targeting error. This was a facility that was kind of close-ish to another military one. Supposedly it had been used in the past as this. And then, like I said, I think most people are reporting that it was a U.S. strike. Just the idea that Israel would false flag one target out of so many that, like, we were already going to war with Iran. Why would Israel need to false flag something for us to follow them in on?
You don't think they've done false flag operations to get us involved before? That's a very common occurrence with Israel.
What, like 9/11 or?
No, I didn't say 9/11. Don't make me out to be some conspiracy theory.
What is the false? Without getting into this, there's no compelling reason for me to think that this was Israel. If that evidence pops up, I mean, I changed my mind on it.
How about the entire Afghanistan war? You don't think it was a false flag operation? We have an actual occurrence where we had to be there to actually benefit ourselves?
What do you mean wouldn't this be 9/11, or what do you mean?
No. I'm not mentioning 9/11 alone. I'm mentioning Israel coming to the United States. Netanyahu came to Congress and he was telling us of these issues as to why we should join the war and join them. Do you know what they were?
For which are you talking about when he did Afghanistan and Iraq?
Yes.
Do you know what they were? No, which ones?
Weapons of mass destruction.
Sure, but I think Bush...
That's a false flag. He lied to us. He came to Congress and lied to our U.S. politicians and said, hey, if you guys don't join, you're next. They're going to be pointed at you, shooting missiles at you, and come to find out, we go bombard these countries, and now they hate us.
Well,
this
first,
is why we have an immigration problem.
This is not a come to find out. The United States has the strongest intelligence in the world. We knew that there weren't weapons of mass destruction there. It was Bush and Cheney that decided to set up a whole separate office to try to get unvetted information, to try to claim that
maybe there
was some
there. Where do we get most of our intelligence from in the Middle East? Who is the strong point? They help us
I imagine
most?
We collaborate with a lot of people in the region. I imagine we collaborate with Israel and probably Saudi Arabia.
Israel, thank you.
Yeah,
so
sure.
We get most of our intelligence in the
but
Middle
you don't,
East
but if
Israel.
Your good intelligence practice is not a single source of intelligence that you believe verbatim to start wars off of. This is why you collaborate it with other sources. This is why you validate it with your IC. We're not relying singularly on Israel just to take us to war in any place.
It's happening right now. It's happening around Iran. Why did the U.S. just come in and bomb? Months ago, we bombed the nuclear facilities in Iran, saying there's, again, Netanyahu again, decades later, they're very close to having nuclear weapons. Pretty good impression, I think. They're very close to nuclear weapons. They have these facilities, bomb them, and then they bomb them. What did Tulsi Gabbard say about the facilities?
Well, that they were obliterated?
No, before that. Before the bombing happened, what did she say about them?
Well, I don't remember specifically.
She said there's no nuclear threat there, and then we bombed and said, yes, there is. We bombed them, and then just to come find
out
again,
are you saying she said this? Was this before she was the head of the DNI?
Actively.
I would have to go back and check. I'm pretty sure most people, I think even nuclear international agencies were reporting that there was like, is it 400 kilograms of like 60% or whatever enriched uranium? I think consensus around the world was that was probably true.
But we're talking about intelligence. We're talking about U.S. intelligence and Israeli intelligence. I believe the Israeli intelligence is what's dragging us in this war. You said we don't go based off of just one intelligence agency giving us information. We hop on board and join the war. Our own Tulsi Gabbard and our government said that there was no nuclear facilities there after we bombed them. And also just recently she came out and said that there is no threat in Iran, and yet we're still here.
She did not say that recently. That's not true.
Like a month ago she said that.
No.
Actually, a week ago she said that. She
did not say that specifically. She explicitly said that it's not up to them to determine if there's an imminent threat. And then she confirmed that we had destroyed the nuclear facilities before.
Facilities. Who's it up to then? It would be, let's say, possibly a strong intelligence, one of the best in the world, who's maybe right next
door. I don't
door
disagree
to Iran.
That we're there right now because of
Israel?
Because Netanyahu wants us there. That is my position.
Agree?
Yes, but I don't think that a Democrat would have capitulated like Trump did. I think that's the issue.
Again, we can't gauge that, but we absolutely
we can't. But
we
I have
could,
like
we,
I
we
can
both
look at
agreed
I
that
can look
Kamala
at,
would be there. Not
we,
her physically.
No, no,
she doesn't
no,
like
no,
to
no, no, no. It was
the
agreement
like
of whether or not she would defend Israel against Iran. Like, I agree with that. But, like, this is, without getting lost in all of the mental gymnastics, like, who has taken all of the aggressive posturing towards Iran? We had the Republicans under Bush put Iran on the axis of evil. We had Donald Trump moving the embassy to Jerusalem and taking the fuck you position towards the Palestinians. We had Obama do the JCPOA, the nuclear deal with Iran. We had Trump come in and completely and totally tear it up and, you know, trash them and say that we're going to destroy them or whatever. We had Biden in office who assisted Israel in defense against Iranian missile attacks, but was not bombing or attacking Iran. And now we brought Trump back, and now we've got, this is our second foray into attacking Iran. When you look at the history of like the presidents, Republican, Democrat, and now Republican again, and then you look at like all the actions even that Trump has taken, it's very obvious that Trump is incredibly aggressive on Iran in a way that Democrats have not been.
There haven't been threatening attacks on Israel like there has been under Donald Trump compared to Biden, and potentially if Kamala was in there, we don't know if these attacks would have happened, but if they did, I without a doubt would believe that Kamala Harris would say our strongest ally, which is what they all like to say, Israel's the strongest ally, that they were physically attacked on their soil, a massacre happened where they were slaughtered. Kamala Harris wouldn't sit back and just say, hey, I'll send you some money. Hey, when in one of her Indian or Hispanic accents she likes to throw on there, I think she would physically say, we're going in there with our Air Force or our Navy, powering positions, I think she would defend them just like we are now, if not possibly worse.
I mean, you can say that, but like explicitly, like people have been critical of Biden's like weak response to the Houthis. They said that he should have bombed them more. We didn't. We didn't provide them a whole bunch of like, we're going to go and bomb the Gaza Strip with you when October 7th happened.
He did worse, actually. He funded the terrorists instead of like Trump stopping funding towards the terrorists. Biden actually continued to fund them.
Some of this money
was funding for Israel and Palestine because he sent money to both. A lot of that money actually in turn went to Hamas for building certain missiles to shoot back at Israel.
Sure, but I mean, like, the issue...
Sure? What do you mean, sure? He funded
the
terrorists.
Issue
you
is
can't just
the,
say
the,
sure.
No. One, Hamas is not shooting missiles, number one. Number two, the Gaza...
Hamas isn't shooting missiles, everybody. Breaking news.
Well, there were rockets. They don't have, like, missile-launching platforms in the Gaza Strip.
Okay, but...
Right? There's a substantial difference, number one. Number two. Number three is Hamas was the government of the Gaza Strip, so they're going to be getting money and receiving aid. Technically, all money that goes into the Gaza Strip is going through Hamas.
What do you think they're going to do with that money?
Well, to some extent, you hope they take care of the people, but to another extent, they're also...
They're going to take care of the people. They steal the food.
What is the alternative?
Them.
Do you completely starve the entire region and give them $0 and watch everybody die?
No, so we bring in a strike force, take out Hamas instead of bombing women and children instead of just sporadically throwing bombs in there, which Israel likes to do, and we fund them doing that with our
taxpayer
dollars.
How do you just take
out
Hamas with razor precision? They literally live amongst the population. They literally are embedded in every single part of the governance and life of... Hamas is not just a terrorist org. They were the government. They were the administrator of the Gaza Strip.
And they were voted in, unfortunately, and other people are stuck being entrenched in poverty, crime, and they're being killed by their own government, which they voted for, which I highly doubt they'd vote for them again willingly. The whole point I'm trying to make here is Israel, which we fund taxpayers' dollars to them. They're just a blanket of rockets and missiles at them. They throw down these pamphlets to the Palestinian people saying, hey, we're going to be bombing you in 15 hours, you need to leave. They can't just up and hold, leave their lives like that. Some of them, unfortunately, can't do it in time, so they're bombed and killed. I think it's much better we send in a task force because Israel claims to have some of the best intelligence and military of the whole entire world. So I think it's fairly fair to say that they can bring a strike forces to precision.
Sure, I understand. Okay, hold on. When
strike forces to take out these terrorists instead of bombing women and children. I think we can agree a strike force would be much more efficient for not bombing and killing women and children.
No, I think that's
children.
A fantasy. I don't think it's possible.
It's never been demonstrated
before.
You think missiles are better than a strike force to protect women
I think
and
that
children?
Hamas is enough in number and that it's sufficiently difficult to penetrate and figure out like what you need to do. Like there were some strike
they're
forces.
They're tinier than ISIS. What do you mean?
Yeah, but they're in just the Gaza Strip. It's a very small region. They're a lot more embedded in the population than ISIS was, you know, across Iraq and Syria.
Well, it's not like we're invading Iraq or Iran where the mountains are a big struggle for us. Palestine and Gaza are basically a flat desert now because of how much they've bombed them. Have you seen the before and after pictures?
Yes.
So what's the problem? It's an open area. There's no defense where they're going to be stuck like we're fighting
in
Japan.
The defense is that they live amongst the civilians.
Again, so bombing them is easier?
Well, it's easier, yeah. I'm just saying that the fantasy that we can just send a task force in and get rid of Hamas doesn't make any sense. I don't think that would have ever been a possibility.
How is that not a possibility?
Because it's a fantasy. What does that even mean?
How is that not a possibility?
Because you can't. There's no,
why can't you?
Because there aren't superheroes in real life where 10 superhero guys go in and defeat 100 bad guys and then come back out and they're fine. The few times there were targeted strike force operations.
We dropped in Venezuela and how many U.S. soldiers were dead? How many U.S. soldiers were dead when we dropped in Venezuela? We dropped in their capital, literally kidnapped their president.
Compare the size of Venezuela to the Gaza Strip, number one. Number two, that was only removing a single...
You just said Gaza was small, so was Venezuela. We propped in there like it was nothing. It was a
Venezuela is a huge... is a country. The Gaza Strip is...
So it's bigger than Gaza.
Yes.
So we invaded a country that's bigger than Gaza and we had no deaths. Is what you're saying.
Yeah, when I say how small or big it is, I'm talking about the population density. Mm-hmm. It's not like Maduro was living in a skyscraper with 10,000 other civilians right next to him. And for Maduro, that was a single target that, because Venezuela is operating as a kind of a real country, when you take out the leader like that, it kind of does a lot to them. Whereas for Hamas, one, I'm pretty sure most of their leadership was over in Qatar anyway.
Yeah, the leaders are cowards. They take all these billions of dollars and they don't even live in the same country that they claim
to
support.
Regardless of feelings on how Israel persecuted that war, Biden did offer some restraint to them. Trump has offered none. Do you
restraint
agree with that
who?
Or no?
Restraint to who?
To Biden offered restraint to Israel, and Trump has given no restraint. He said they can basically do whatever they want.
No, because remember on live television, he said he cussed about Israel with what they're doing because they weren't listening to him.
He does angry truths, but in practice, nothing happens.
I mean, again, yes, I'm, but again...
Biden told when Netanyahu wanted to do their first big push into Rafah, Biden said you have to wait a week and you need to evacuate all 1 million civilians. Trump mm-hmm. wouldn't have made that same call. Trump has never told Israel not to do it, but they've gotten free rein to do basically whatever they want in Syria and Lebanon, bombing Beirut, bombing anybody in the Gaza Strip.
Do they need our permission?
I think probably.
If
the U.S.
possibly,
if the U.S. is not going to cooperate with you or is going to punish you or chastise you for doing something, I think you're probably less likely to do it if you're Israel.
I find that funny because I think just like a couple of weeks ago, we actually bombed first and Israel was upset that we didn't tell them. Israel keeps contacting Marco Rubio and our government saying, what's going on? What are you guys doing? You guys are bombing first. They are being left out of the loop. So it seems like...
Bombing
the intelligence of what we're doing in our war with Iran here. They're being left virtually out of the loop in some scenarios, and they're upset with that.
I thought that whole first huge attack was a coordinated between Israel and the United States.
The first huge attack, yes, but this whole intel, they're being left out of our own intel, and they're complaining that they're not being involved, meaning that we're not actually maybe as close as you thought when it comes to this conflict, and that it's not a decision for Israel to make in accordance with us.
I can agree that Israel's probably being left out on a lot of these talks.
I'm glad you could.
But I don't think that that's because of a deliberate policy choice that Trump is making to exclude Israelis from the conversation. I think
they just forgot.
They're incompetent.
You think they just are just so stupid that they're not going to coordinate with Israel?
the same
they have.
The same
they
administration
they
that, hold on, you the same administration and leadership, the same administration and leadership that couldn't fathom that Iran would start bombing the Strait of Hormuz and would start cutting off supply of oil to the world. Yeah, I do think they're that stupid. Do you disagree?
I don't think it's stupidity or in lack of brain cells. I think it's because they continue to bomb with Israel here attacking Iran. I think there's no way to gauge exactly what they're going to do because they're looking at them less of a threat than they actually are because this war shouldn't have happened in the first place. I hope we can both agree with that.
That Trump has been driving us towards for 10 years, right?
It's really?
Yes.
Really? I think every U.S. president we've had in the past couple decades has been driving us to war with Iran. They've actually programmed us to want war in the Middle East, according with even Bush, for
Israel
example.
They had campaigns
about this.
That's fine. Israel was super ass-pained when Obama signed that nuclear deal with Iran. It was one of the biggest betrayals that Israel felt when it came to U.S. presidents. So to look at an action like that from Obama and then compare that to Trump, who's literally on his knees, chipping around the embassy, like championing the Abraham Accords, like capitulating to Israel in every single possible way, like I just don't see the. I think
there's
no way.
That's more about solving peace in the Middle East. Like I said before, Bibi Netanyahu, the wonderful leader, our current president, Bibi Netanyahu, he was going since the 90s to Congress, mentioning the Middle East. And every time you mentioned the Middle East, because he said, we got to take out Afghanistan and Syria, these are big targets, he said, Iran. Iran is the big king of it all. He mentioned Iran since the beginning of the 90s. So this isn't just a new thing. Trump's all
I
about
understand.
The Iran war.
Yeah.
This has been a campaign since the 90s under every single U.S. president we've had since the 90s.
But Obama is not attacking Iran. Obama is signing a nuclear deal with them.
He was
Biden,
attacking
even
all the
when,
Middle Eastern countries.
Even,
it's not just
sure,
Iran.
That's
Iran,
fine, but we're talking about Iran. We're talking about Iran right now. And
who
when
funds
even when
all of these? Who
even
funds
when
all of these?
Even when Iran was attacking Israel, we didn't invade under Biden when there was that first huge missile attack or whatever that mm-hmm. a bunch of people helped with intercepting. We didn't go and invade Iran afterwards.
When we bombed and did drone strikes in Afghanistan and invaded boots on the ground, when we did Iran, obviously just now, but all these Middle Eastern countries we've attacked, who funds all of these? Iran is the big king of all of this. They're funding all of these proxies, right? Right.
To some extent, yeah,
right,
the
right.
Middle East.
So
yeah.
Any proxy we're going after, which Obama did, Biden did to some extent, lesser than both, but we've all attacked the Middle East, which is all to hurt Iran and to diminish their power.
That's fine, but now you brought it to the whole Middle East. I wouldn't disagree with you there, but there are stages to conflict. We
right.
have with the regime change
this has been a build up.
Fight
this
that
has
we're
been
doing.
This has been a build
it's
up
only
to
built
Iran.
Up under Trump is the one that
no,
got it.
No, 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 no. This has been since
so
the
what
90s.
Is the what is the comparing action that Trump has taken in either his first or second term towards Iran that Biden or Obama did?
The only thing Trump did in his first term against Iran was stopping to give them and it froze funding, right? Trump froze funding to Iran
and cut off the nuclear deal.
And cut off the nuclear deal. Other than that, Donald Trump did nothing to Iran. He did none of these strikes he's doing now. Like I said, this has been a buildup to Iran. All of these countries are basically think of it as a
well,
big
but the,
thing.
The big
wait,
thing
wait,
was
wait,
Iran
wait,
getting
wait,
nuclear
wait,
weapons,
wait,
right? So why not cutting up that deal?
Point.
Does not that
let
put us on
point.
A time?
Please, Steven, let me get to my point. The whole idea was this is a buildup to Iran. Think of it as a company. Iran's at the very top. They own the company. They're trying to take this company down. They're trying to start the smaller base level of the company and build their way up. They've gone for Afghanistan. They've gone for Iraq. They've gone now going up to Iran. It's been a buildup to kick out Iran and take power in the Middle East because there's a huge economic impact on all of us if we have control there. So it's a buildup to Iran. We're now at the buildup, the very top of this is we're now physically striking Iran. And they're not going to stop until we get a successful regime change or they bomb the hell out of them where they stop. That's what it's going to be. And it's been a buildup just because Trump is president now. I think if Kamala was in at the same time, she absolutely would have done the same thing because this has been a buildup for
if
decades.
If Democrats would have done the same thing, then why didn't Biden do it? When Iran tried to bomb, when they were shooting missiles and stuff at Israel.
Again, it was a buildup. They're taking.
No, no. Why didn't Biden go? You think Netanyahu probably wanted to,
they
right?
They went after proxies at the same time.
But the proxies are different. It's not.
No,
it's a proxy.
Positioning. It's been a buildup. Iran is now. Biden can't be now. If he was now, it would be him. If it wasn't.
But
Kamala,
why? But why
Trump,
didn't Biden do it?
Because it's now. It's a buildup.
No, but I'm asking.
Biden 4 years
why
ago. Biden now.
Why?
Biden 4 years ago isn't the plan of now. I'm saying
there's
it's
no,
been a buildup.
Unfalsifiable.
How is it? They've been building up since the 90s, right? They've been building up this war since the 90s?
Not really, no. No, I don't think so.
Have,
no,
yeah.
I don't really think
Netanyahu,
so.
What do you mean? They started in the 90s.
Netanyahu begging since the 90s does not mean we've been building towards war since the 90s.
When did the Afghanistan war start?
The one we did after 9/11? I don't know, was it 2003?
Early 90s, 2003, or the early 2000s, but the buildup of the war in the Middle East has been the start, verbalizing it in the 90s, pre-programming us to enter this war.
So you think
it
doesn't matter who the president is, we're always going to be
absolutely,
following?
Absolutely. If Kamala was here, if Biden was here now, it would have been now. It doesn't matter. It's Trump, Pence, Rubio.
Do you think that if Trump would have won his second term, and it would have been Trump when Israel got bombed, do you think we would have attacked Iran then?
Not necessarily, because again, that would be Biden in office, right?
No, but I'm asking if it would have been Trump instead of Biden. Do you think he would have attacked them then?
No. This is a pre-programmed and full campaign that's been started since the 90s, going to now.
What piece of evidence could possibly persuade you out of this position?
It's not a persuasion. You can't persuade me out of it. I'm telling you, this is what it is. Destiny.
Why did Obama sign? Wait, why did Obama make the JCPOA if this has been the plan the whole time? The Iranian nuclear deal to make it so that they had to let in inspectors so that they weren't pursuing a nuclear weapons program. Why would Obama make this deal if it wasn't? If there was like all the plan,
because they want to put Iran on the map, give them an idea, put and again programming us to even think about this, to give it to them, take it away. So that starts off with a negative. We're slowly building up to it. That's what I'm telling you. It could be Fuentes. It could be you if you're president. It could be me if we were president in this term. It would be happening.
So
now.
Even when we're trying to thaw relations with Iran, we're really just thawing them to bring them to a higher level of salience to the American public.
You think we're thawing them right now?
No, I don't. But under Obama, I think we were. I think that's
because
why
it wasn't
so upset.
Time yet. It wasn't time yet. That's what I'm saying. It was a slow buildup. We take out
so
the proxies.
Falsifiable position. We're fighting the proxies. The proxies are fighting us. Yeah, of course.
We've been fighting the proxies first. Who funds the proxies? Iran. So we're taking away from their money. We froze their money. So now they're putting money that they aren't getting from us.
But then Obama unfroze
more.
The money. But it seems like you're thinking they unfroze the money
to
make us.
Trump froze the money. So Obama unfroze it. They're being funded. We're fighting the proxies. They're profiting. Trump freezes it. We're still fighting the proxies, not receiving money from us. That's a slow buildup. Iran's struggling from this slightly economically. Now it's building up to the point where now they're attacking Israel and that Iran is on the map. Iran is the target. That is now. Iran is the target. If Iran bombed Israel, if October 7th happened, I guarantee you, like I said before, Kamala would be in there just as bad as Trump, maybe even worse.
Okay. But I have 4 years of Biden to show that there were no direct attacks on Iran when Biden was in office, and I don't think
it was a buildup. It's a slow buildup. We can't just hop on the war train. It's got to be a campaign just like Bush did. It was a campaign to start the war. It was a campaign against
the war. We hopped on the war train, I feel like, pretty soon for the 9/11 stuff. I feel like we were all ready to go.
There was a tragedy that joined us. There's no tragedy now. They have to build up to it. They can't just convince us with nothing. They got to convince us with tragedy.
I understand the perspective. It's just an unfalsifiable theory, and then even the times when Obama's thawing relations with Iran. Apparently, that's just part of the overall plan. So, no matter what,
we just got out of war. No one wants to hop back in that. No one wants to see their sons.
No one wants to hop into
back.
It now, but Trump apparently wants to. For
they're
reasons
building
unbelong.
Up to it, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Okay, I think we have to move on. Soon, do you have any final thoughts or words for us?
I appreciate what you guys are doing here. I appreciate you having me. I'm very privileged to speak to you, and I this is a dream of mine, so I appreciate it.
Cool. Well, thanks for the chat. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you. Hey, Steven, how are you going?
Hey, I'm going great. How are you going?
Going good.
Good. Hold the mic right up your mouth.
What would you say?
Hold the mic up to
your
mouth.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
I am
even more.
Gotcha, like this?
Yeah, like 3 inches away.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, well, you got to be close. Okay, go.
For the audience watching at home, I'm Jackson Heeb. I'm a 19-year-old political influencer. I'm a Turning Point member, college Republican member, all the little Republican clubs. And I have a lot of disagreements with Trump, so that's a little bit of a rough topic for me, but I have some other stuff that I'd be happy to talk about.
Yeah, go for it.
So I guess my question for you is, as a Christian, do you believe that I should be advocating for policies that incorporate Christian morality?
To some extent. I think that there are... I think that your religion can inform your morality to some extent, and I think there is some morality that is okay to enforce on others. There are some crimes against humanity that are...
Yeah, hold this, like...
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. That are so bad that we all kind of, like, agree to come together and say these things are not okay. I don't think there's, like, legitimate disagreement on both sides. So, for instance, when it comes to, like, stealing or when it comes to murder, the unjustified killing of somebody, right? Like, these are things that we all agree there should be no carve-outs. These are just bad things. I think that there are things that are clearly outside of what should be legally mandated. So, for instance, like, legally mandating that everybody be Christian or legally mandating that everybody has to go to church on Sunday. I think we probably both agree that this is not okay.
Yeah, I'm an advocate for mandated belief, but yeah. I guess one of the areas that I see a lot of confusion is a lot of the time whenever I talk to people who are, I guess, more in favor of secular government, a big complaint arises where it's sort of like my belief is based off of a reality while yours is based off of a fictitious religion. And as someone who sort of has an anti-realist backing, I kind of see it that these things are equivalent. So I guess the better question is, where do you draw the line? Because obviously I wouldn't advocate for mandated belief. I think that goes against my religion.
Mm-hmm.
But where do you draw the line on what policies would be considered moral or immoral to advocate for based off of a religious predisposition?
I guess it would have to be ones, I guess my language is a little wishy-washy, but it would have to be ones where I feel like there isn't like legitimate disagreement on both sides are things that it's okay to advocate against, like to codify. So things like murder or stealing or arson or whatever. Things where I think there's like legitimate room for disagreement, I think that should probably be left to, I guess, individuals to decide. But we would probably have to move policy by policy to figure out exactly... Do you want to bring up a couple like examples or whatever? We can kind of talk through them.
More so just based off of like the vague construct of it. Because I think if you look at a population like America, where currently I believe around 60% of the population is Christian, I do believe that it's worth taking into account these sort of Christian morality basis. So for good examples, abortion. I believe that if most Americans who are Christian believe in this scenario, it seems as though they don't. But hypothetically, if they did mostly believe in abortion restriction, I think it would make sense and be ethically sound for them to implement that restriction.
Still closer?
Still, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's if you can see like where my mouth is for this, I'm like right up to this.
I'll kiss it. Yeah, okay.
So I feel like abortion is probably the hairiest of all the issues, but I still feel like abortion is an issue where I think there are legitimate disagreements on both sides to this, like up to a certain point. So I feel like that's one that's best left. If a Christian feels like it's an unethical thing to do, then a Christian shouldn't have an abortion. But I don't know if I think that that's a legitimate thing to mandate to other people, just because I think it can be, I think there are legitimate arguments on both sides of this, and the costs are quite high if you quote unquote get it wrong. So I feel like it's up to an individual to figure this out. Where if you get it wrong on the pro-choice side, I guess you're murdering a baby. If you get it wrong on the pro-life side, you're, you know, turning a woman into an incubator.
I guess you talk about the idea of like genuine arguments against it, and I see it as sort of like it's very hard to draw a line for like a genuine philosophical argument against something and for something when we don't really have a construct that we can reach to as like this is a first principle that builds our argument around it. So like a good example is, I mean, any belief is as arbitrary as another if we don't have any like concrete moral first principles we can all agree on. So I find it difficult to say like, okay, well, this is a good argument, this is a bad argument. It could be that if someone believes that the Bible dictates that through like divine command theory that a child shouldn't be aborted, or I guess, you know, child's obviously intuition pump language, but you know, a fetus shouldn't be aborted, it seems as though that would be a reasonable route for them to take.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely understand the perspectives of people who are, especially consulting scripture for figuring out what they think their morality should be. I don't think for abortion, I don't think scripture is going to help that much in terms of figuring out, one, if you even think abortion is legal or not, versus two, if you can enforce your will on other people in via government. I don't know if you would get that from Christianity so much. But I guess when I look broadly speaking at the like the American Liberal Project, like one of the reasons why this country has been so successful is because we can incorporate people of different religious or moral backgrounds into the country, and then we can broadly agree on some things that are just that like need to be codified into some kind of law against them. And then those are the like kind of like these fundamental basic things that we all agree. But then when it comes to issues that are more kind of on the outside, so maybe like gay marriage, I know people have different positions on that, or abortion is probably like the hairiest of those, or maybe like veganism. Like these are things where people have arguments on both sides. I don't feel like that's an appropriate thing that you should command to other people via legislation. I guess I can understand you saying that if you're coming from a secular or an atheist background, how do you even begin to build that foundation up? I guess that's a more of a philosophy argument. But I mean, like, I would have my arguments for that, and I'm sure other people would have their arguments for that.
Yeah. I guess I'd be open to having that conversation.
I guess in my world, I'm looking at a lot of kind of like human intuitions. I think there are things that we kind of automatically agree are good or bad. So like cutting somebody's head off or torturing somebody or starving somebody or depriving somebody of water. Like these are things that produce like really horrible bad feelings in the body. So they're like some very basic things that we can say we probably shouldn't be able to do these to other people without their participation or and consent with these particular things. And then once you become more and more abstracted from those things, you get away from like the legislative criminal territory and more in kind of like into the cultural territory. So like lying or cheating on a partner, these are things that a lot of people agree are bad, but not like so bad that it should be like illegal to tell a lie to your parents or something like that, or should be illegal to lie to somebody.
Okay, I guess one of the areas where like because I can agree in like obviously policy should be made like normatively, right? But in that area though, we can say like, okay, if we're talking about like normative policy decision making, if most of the people in America are Christian, then doesn't it feel as though like under, you know, normative policy making, that should be just by virtue of being a blanket majority where a large amount of our policy comes from?
No, because we have to do an interesting thing in the US where we have to balance both like what the population wants, but also protect kind of minority opinion. Like we wouldn't say that every time the population hits like 51% of something, if it was like 49% black people and 51% white people, that the 51% people should be able to vote away all the rights of the 49%, right? We have some basic protections for some sort of rights here that the majority can't simply attack or vote away without a substantial change to our laws or our constitution.
Yeah, but I guess you wouldn't call it immoral to push for those policies just because there's only a 51% chance though, or a 51% belief rate, right? It seems to me as though like the Christian belief policies are just as equally unsubstantiable as any other belief policy, because for me at least I see it that no real foundational reality can be adequately proven greater than another.
I think that for what you're saying, I think it would probably come down to your personal feelings on the fact of the matter about some of these things. So like for abortion, I strongly feel like there is a fact of the matter that can be debated on. And I think there are obviously I'm on the pro-choice side, so I feel like the arguments are stronger on that side. And the idea that somebody could legislate or dictate away that to just because a majority of people are Christians, I don't think that that makes for a good liberal cohesive society. I think if we were more like a theocratic society or something, I think you can make that argument. But I think in a society that doesn't like declare for a particular religion, I don't think religious people should be able to enforce their morality so strongly on people that even on contentious issues, they get to have the final say and they can dictate another person's life to them like that.
So I guess I feel as if we do this all the time with different issues. You know, as you were talking about before, how a lot of our morality comes from our base, I guess, assume normative first principles. I think that for the majority of Christians, Christianity would apply to being one of those. A lot of them have a sort of, you know, unsubstantiated but very true feeling of faith, and through that they exercise their beliefs on abortion. I guess I could say I feel as though all the time we try to push for beliefs that most people don't have, or I mean not most people don't have, but that we sort of have through an unsubstantiated means. So I guess I have a hard time drawing the line between, like, for example, legislating abortion versus legislating murder, since it seems as though these are both drawn through first principles. Christianity is just another first principle for many Christians.
I guess I would have a hard time, like, aside from abortion, like, what are other laws, criminal laws that we have on the books that we feel like are not able to be secularly arrived at, or arrived at through, like, a multitude of different religious beliefs?
I mean, I would argue that any other law or anything other than Christianity is just ethical emotivism. So I say we can't really substantiate those accurately. But a good example would be like gay marriage laws, for example. I'm personally split on the issue due to the scripture, but for me at least, I find that's a really good example of like an area wherein people who are of some sense of Christianity could legislate and some sense could not.
Yeah, but I got, yeah, so I'm trying to find out, besides like abortion, like, is there some law where it's like we've got a law that if you weren't religious, because despite the fact that the majority of the country is religious and has been religious, I feel like most of our laws are almost all of our criminal laws that I can think of are things that secular people could easily arrive at as well. That, like, I don't know if there's two sides to the, you know, arson, or two sides to murder, or two sides to stealing.
I mean, I would say it's equally arbitrary as any other policy. I don't see a logical way in which you can arrive at it with no true first principles. Because if at the foundation of your reality is all just kind of like felt out, this feels wrong, this feels bad, then how can we truly say, okay, well, this is, I guess, a more arrivable or a less arrivable conclusion? I see that the policy to allow for murder or not allow for murder are equally arbitrary.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how to argue against your position if you're, because to restate your argument, if you're coming at it from a Christian perspective, in your world, you think that there are a set of moral principles, and these emerge from scripture, basically, and that these are the particular things that you advocate for that are right or wrong. So when you look at things like murder or stealing, like, you've got a foundation from which you say that stealing is wrong, murder is wrong. Maybe you feel like arguments about abortion come from scripture as well, so you would argue for those things as well. But every single policy position you argue from is coming eventually, or ultimately is rooted in some kind of scripture argument. Whereas for other people in society, they have to have things that are rooted in their own worldview that they're pushing for, but there's no reason why, when I say something like abortion is a contentious topic, and then your response to that is, well, you can say abortion is contentious, but in my world, you've got a first principles derivation for all of your policy positions ultimately, so abortion is going to be just as contentious as murder could be, which is just as contentious as rape or arson or anything else, because ultimately, at the end of the day, it all is like a first principles argument, basically, right?
More so, their contention is equally valid.
Yeah.
Because I can say, like,
that's what I mean, yeah.
It's very easy to say, like, okay, well, obviously murder is wrong, and obviously abortion is really contentious, but I find that really hard to say when, to me, they're both equally very contentious. Because The first principles for everyone are all equally arbitrary. It's very easy to say, and I was an atheist most of my life, it's very easy to say, like, okay, well, Christianity is very arbitrary, but my belief that murder is wrong is not. I see it as though, as a universal anti-realist, that all of our first principles are inherently in some ways arbitrary.
Sure, I understand what you're saying there. I don't know how I can argue that from your perspective, though. From my perspective, I would, obviously, as an atheist, I don't believe in any kind of God. I mean, I would look at the collection of all the different moral systems that people have invented, you know, will invent, and you say that, like, some moral positions are going to be arbitrary. Perhaps like the formal, like the formal declaration of those systems, like how we actually say it or something. I mean, maybe you can, like, how we logically justify it, maybe. I don't know. But, like, I would say that if you have like a collection of biological beings and all of these people are coming from more or less the same fundamental biological, you know, conditions, that, like, it's not a coincidence that if you take a million people, like, almost all of them are going to hate starving to death. Like, that's not a coincidence, right? And if you take all of these people, it's not going to be a coincidence that all of them seem to favor societies where they can trust their neighbor and they don't steal from their neighbor, or they don't kill their children, or they don't eat, you know, their grandparents or whatever, right? So you know, we can say that from like a from a written perspective, you know, the logical justification of one thing might be arbitrary or not arbitrary, but I don't think the fact that so many different people have kind of agreed on certain moral principles, I would say that intuitively all of these kind of emerge from humans in a pretty predictable way because of our biological foundation. Now, you would say something, you would have a different argument in how you would approach this from scripture, but like how you would approach it from scripture, I would just incorporate into my broader kind of intuitive argument, but you wouldn't obviously agree with that, I understand, so I don't know how to break through
I guess
on
it's
that.
Somewhat of an impasse, yeah. I have another question.
Go for it.
So obviously I have a lot of disagreements with Trump's and Trump's rhetorical stances. Do you think there's any way to turn down the heat in America, and if so, how?
Well, Trump could do it.
Well, aside, I'm saying post-Trump, what do you think what's the right way for, assuming we get a Democrat in 28 or possibly a Republican in 28, what is the right way to move forward from that?
This is a really rough one that, you know, I've been debating a lot with other people on the left, but like, and it sounds more aggressive initially, but I think the problem is on the Republican side, the Republicans feel like there's never any kind of payback for any of the unhinged things that they do in office. So when Republicans, like I can think of three huge examples off the top of my head. When the immunity ruling came down for Trump, there wasn't a single Republican, despite how much they talk about how dangerous Democrats are, nobody was really scared about Biden doing crazy stuff with criminal immunity. Whereas for Trump, I think a lot of people were genuinely afraid of what Trump would do because of how much he stretches executive action. When you look at, and then for two other examples, there are two things that Republicans have been a little bit reluctant to push really far on. One is like Supreme Court packing, and then the other is destroying the filibuster. But I think the reason why is because, one, they already own the Supreme Court, right? 6-3 for who knows how long. So they don't have much to gain there. But if they were to engage in any kind of court packing behavior, they know the Democrats would do it, and then it would be over. And then when it comes to eliminating the filibuster, since Democrats seem to like passing legislation more than Republicans do, if they were to get rid of the filibuster, they know they would have huge like repercussions in the future. But like on every other area, it seems like Democrats are either unable or unwilling, sometimes to their credit, sometimes to their detriment, to push as far as Trump has. And so Republicans just are shameless when it comes to telling lies to the media, when it comes to just like flagrant abuses of the presidential powers, you know, when it just in all of these different ways. I mean, we can run down from one policy to the next. It feels like Republicans are just, yeah, they're fearless. They feel like they can do whatever crazy stuff they want, and there's never going to be any kind of like repercussion for any of the stuff they do. Yeah?
I guess for me at least, and a lot of this I do believe is caused by failures of the GOP. I see this pendulum building, where, you know, obviously Trump does a lot of stuff that I disagree with, and then in retaliation, the left does a lot of crazy stuff, and then in retaliation, we get a crazier Republican, crazier leftist. Do you think that it would be, I guess I sort of see the idea where it's, you know, push to the levels that they're pushing, but I feel as though that starts a death spiral into the actual death of our democracy.
So people say this a lot, but I don't agree. I think the death spiral is doing nothing. Because I think that because if the other side felt like, well, if we do some crazy stuff, they're going to do it as well, then they just wouldn't do the crazy stuff, and I think it all stops. But I think right now the reason why the Republicans are so fearless is because they feel like the next Democrat that comes in office isn't going to do much. And I would point to, as much as I thought his president was a success on a lot of different levels, Biden was like an incredibly tame president that allowed for so much unhinged Republican behavior, and Democrats got absolutely no credit for it. Like, there would be no special counsel investigating Donald Trump in Donald Trump's presidency. Whereas under Biden, how many different investigations they investigated him, there was the whole report related to the documents, you know, there was endless investigations into Hunter Biden, like there what Merrick Garland took 2 years to appoint, you know, Jack Smith. Like, these are things that Democrats did, that Biden and Garland did, to be seen as like good stewards of democracy and to not be politically partisan, but we got absolutely no credit for it. And then Trump comes in and starts fabricating indictments and failing to get indictments from grand juries because he's so hungry to go after his political opponents. So, like, what was the point there in Democrats being nice?
Yeah, I can see the alternative there, but I think a lot of that is a uniquely Trump problem. Trump obviously has this really powerful constituency behind him that loves him and worships him in a way. I think in a lot of ways, if you had a Democrat in who was tame, was normal, and especially after the current regime we're seeing that is very intense, and I mean, you've seen the polls, it's turning off a lot of Republican voters. I supported Trump going into 24. I currently don't. I feel as though people like me, if we saw a Democrat get into office who was more by the books, more tame, and didn't carry those same problems, that would build so much trust and political capital in the DNC that the GOP would just purely lose out on. I really think that carrying it on is going to damage it far more in the long run, and I think it is a Trump-unique problem.
I disagree. I feel like we've been heading in this direction for decades. I think it's a mistake to assume that Trump was a random accident in the Republican Party, rather than this is kind of the thing that Republicans have been building towards for a long time. I think Republicans have had questionable relationships with fact and truth. I think that Republicans have spent a long time undermining, outwardly, they would undermine a lot of the institutions, although inwardly they would still kind of engage with them. So like higher education has been under attack by Republicans forever, but most of these guys, you know, went to Yale or sent their kids to Ivy League schools. But now it's gotten to the point to where the voter base doesn't realize that they were kind of talking out of both sides of their mouth, and now they support the undermining of all these institutions. Like, I feel like Republicans have just been moving us in this direction over and over and over and over and over again. And then to say that like Trump was just a random accident, like when I look at Trump, like I can easily think back to like QAnon and everything. And as crazy as all the Q people were, like I can think back to like the Tea Party people. And I feel like you can draw lines from all of these different movements leading from A to B to C to D to now we have Trump. I feel like it's not an accident. Do you think Trump could have easily occurred on either side or?
That's very hard for me to say. Sure. I mean, whenever in 2016, I think I was like 9 years old. Yeah. So it's pretty hard because I really can't speak on like past Republican, campaigns before that. It's one of my lower areas of education. But I guess for me at least, like, what do you think would happen if in 2028 you guys get a harder left candidate who implements really strong left policies, you know, does abuse the system more so in a way that is similar to Trump? Do you see it that in, I mean, I guess that would be 32. I mean, what do you think the outcome would be from that?
I mean, I don't want him to abuse the same in the way that Trump has in order to like do new stuff. Like, I think we should adhere to the system. I just think we need to find a way to hold the current administration accountable in order to make it so, I don't know, they're either not allowed to run for office again or some kind of criminal stuff gets, you know, done related to what they're doing. But I think the issue right now is that because there have been no consequences for anything, like most Americans don't even have negative associations with some of the things that have happened. Like, I think, what is it, like 75 or 80% of the Republican Party right now believes that the 2020 election was rigged. And I think that's largely because there was just no strong response to any of these claims. Or a lot of people think that Hunter Biden was cutting checks to his dad when he was vice president. Or like all of these things are things that have gone largely unchecked by the Democratic Party. And by trying to be the bigger man and move on, like I think Biden tried to be the bigger man and move on. He was still cast as this like evil figure by conservatives. It didn't seem like it did anything. It didn't seem like it helped at all.
I guess for me, the part where I have a problem with is you talk about like, you know, finding a way to punish them. And obviously, if, you know, we have the immunity ruling, and if these are federal crimes, they would be if they were committed, you know. I don't know all of the accusations, but assuming these are federal crimes, assuming they would be pardoned out and there would be the, you know, the immunity ruling, how could it be done legally and ethically that we could get any real recourse from this administration, assuming they do what you allege?
I mean, if you decide you want to do it, legally you can kind of do anything if you're willing to be creative with the law. Like, we already saw Republicans do that. Like, the reason why they were trying to make this auto pen argument with Biden was to invalidate
pardons,
right?
Can you do, like, is it wrong just because Republicans are doing it, or is it just wrong? Because for me, like, I'm a deontologist. I believe that if something is wrong, it's wrong from both sides or both angles. It feels unfortunate to me that, you know, as a conservative, you know, we look at the bad things that our party has done in some ways, and then people's response is, we need to match this, or if they're doing it, we have to do it too. It feels like a short-sighted thing, because then obviously you're building the culture, and, you know, policy is downstream in many ways from culture. You're building a culture that bakes in this type of policy decision.
Well, I mean, I think fundamentally actions are different when they're done spontaneously or for a selfish purpose versus when they're done in response to another thing, right? Like if I walk up to you to punch you in the face and then you punch me in the face before I punch you in the face, we're not really doing the same thing, right? Like if you're doing something in response to what I'm doing versus me just doing it spontaneously.
See, I would argue though, unless it's for defense of yourself, I'd argue it's still immoral.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You would punch me as a defensive thing, not because you just want to.
But in this case, though, they're out of office. It wouldn't be defensive.
I think it would be defensive such that you'd be establishing a record to let people know, like, this is a thing that won't be tolerated in the future, and then it sets the behavior in the future, because I don't think Republicans would be acting the way they are now if they thought there was some kind of electoral or criminal consequences for them down the road. Like, I think they're only acting the way they are now is because they think that they're going to be completely... they're not going to be held accountable for literally anything that happens. I think that's the default operating.
I'm seeing a way different culture be created by this hypothetical. It feels to me as though we're creating a culture where everyone who gets into office bends the law, uses it to their will to punish the previous oppositional party until eventually we arrive at like an actual crazy takeover.
Well, like, so here's the question. Did 4 years under Biden help or hurt put us back on track? And do you think that Biden was an aggressive, attacking, hateful president?
It's hard to say. I mean, obviously...
Wait, one at a time. Do you think that... Was Biden about as nice as you could be in terms of a president? Like, he allowed himself and his son to be investigated. There was a special counsel report for her that was made about his own...
I think Biden's temperament was far better than Donald Trump's. Absolutely.
Sure.
And I guess you look at it, though, and you look at the results. If you look at how inflamed people were, you know, on January 6th and how intensely people felt about Donald Trump at the time, I think actually if you evaluate that compared to 2024, it has mellowed out. I think the results of it actually was a de-escalation. I think that if Biden got in, Biden was intense, Biden was vitriolic.
Oh, sure.
And so then Trump got in and he was doing these indictments, we would say, heck yeah, and then we'd see what would happen in 28. It's just like a crazy escalation cycle.
To some extent, I agree with you, but I think that was that de-escalation is a little bit of a part of the problem. And that, how could Trump win that election again? It seems like that would be a failure on Biden's part.
But I guess with all of this incumbency advantage, the pendulum has to swing back. And so
yeah, but the thing is, I don't think we're going to survive. We're not going to survive a lot of these pendulum swings. I don't know if we'll survive the next 3 years.
Exactly. I think that's why. But then
my question is,
they have to turn in the temperature. It's
but
so
we got Trump 2 after Biden. So if we put in Biden 2 after Trump 2, why would we not just get Trump 3? Why would we not get a continuation of that kind of thing? Not actually Biden, but in a similar person to Biden.
I think the way that we get Trump 3 or what people see as Trump, I think Trump is not a great candidate, but I think he's in some ways overhated by some people. I think the way that we get the true candidate who is an absolute evil conservative is if we get a candidate in office in 28 who people vote in thinking they're going to turn down the temperature, and then they turn the heat up insanely because that's how the pendulum goes.
But Biden turned the heat down, didn't he?
Biden turned the heat down, and I think that led to a more mellow Trump 24 than we would have had if Trump
won 2020. You think the Trump 24 right now is mellow?
Way more mellow than 2020. I mean, you believe it was an insurrection.
Yeah, of course.
Do you believe what Trump's doing right now is comparable to what you believe was an insurrection on January 6th?
I think he's done things that are way worse than that by this point already. I think the SAVE Act would be an example of that. I think that him calling for executions of sitting congressmen, I think he's an example of that. I think that multiple unilateral wars and invasion, I think it might be worse than that. The tariffs against the entire planet, the attacking the institutions of the courts over and over again, saying that they don't care about the Supreme Court rulings.
To avoid going down a bit of a rabbit hole, I think it's easy to look at it and say that in 2020 you had people willing to break into the Capitol, people who truly thought the election was stolen, and now we have people who in many ways are misled on what's actually happening in the government. I disagree with a couple of the claims made there, but just for the sake of expediency, I really do believe that Biden's efforts of cooling it down actually worked in some ways. And I think that if we turn up the temperature, that's how you see an actual totalitarian regime.
I just don't understand how we can say if we felt like 2020 was an insurrection, which I do, and then we had 4 years of Biden, and then the guy who tried to insurrect the government gets into office again. I just don't understand how that's at all a victory on the Democratic side.
Well, it's only
side.
A victory because most people didn't believe it was an insurrection.
Yeah, but I think that's because Biden was so soft on it.
Well, maybe you can argue on that specific policy, but in terms of overall, you're talking about bending the law to get punishment for people who are currently legally inadmissible. I think if you're looking at it, I can clearly see a trend building up here. And I feel like, especially if you're arguing, Trump needs to turn down the temperature, that's important. Assuming that people are going to get in office immediately after and dial it up, it feels hypocritical.
Sure. Okay, let me, final question. Or I'm going to ask the final question, and you can respond. So my issue is just that we had Trump won. First of all, we had 8 years of Obama, who I think was the chillest person for both sides, even though Republicans found a way to get mad at him. Then we got Trump 1, which after Obama I thought was kind of crazy. And then after Trump, we got Biden, who was insanely chill, allowed multiple investigations into himself, his own family, wasn't attacking Republicans, managed to pass a lot of joint legislation. Then we get Trump 2, who I think has been way more insane than Trump 1. So I don't know why we would try another chill. It seems like we've had a chill. Who is the crazy person between Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and now we're on the second Trump term. Let's say that the next guy who comes into office is a Democrat, and let's say that he's super chill and passive and lets whatever happens. Why would I not expect an even crazier, another Trump-like candidate after that, when it seems like that would happen
I
under Obama and Biden?
I think that many people don't recognize temperament while it's in office. I think that a lot of people, they recognize the temperament of the previous administration when they have the next administration and with a less preferable temperament. So I think a lot of the reason why we got Biden is because people went from Obama to Trump. I think people had Trump and they look back to Obama and they're so short-sighted that whenever they had Biden again, they didn't care for the temperament. I personally do care for the temperament. I think that right now many Americans are feeling that. I think Americans want to return back to that Biden-era temperament. And I think that if that is brought by the left, that will help you guys and help us in general by actually fixing this problem. Instead of inflaming it and continuing this big pendulum swing, I see it going disastrous for this nation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Hello, still good?
Okay. Good to go?
Yep, we good? Okay. So the topic that I'd like to bring up is the difference in political opinion across standard society in America. We've obviously, I should actually do an introduction. Sorry.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm AJ Raber, I'm 21 years old, and I'm the chief creative officer at Off the Record.
Okay.
So we've done a bunch of college tours, we've gone around, we're all college age, so it makes sense to go talk to, people our age, obviously.
Sure.
The biggest thing that we found is we get absolutely just trying to think of a good phrase for this, but just rude responses to everything. That's us being there, we're setting up, we're getting harassed.
Wait, I'm sorry, real quick. Are you guys right leaning or left leaning?
Right.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
I'm not Republican, but I am conservative. That's okay. my thing. I don't technically lock into any specific ideology. I have varying points. That's my, I try to give everybody a fair shot.
Okay.
So
supported Trump in all three of the last elections, I'm imagining?
I only voted in one of them, and the only reason I voted for Trump is I thought he could bring in good people that can, okay, you know, bolster. Obviously, he has connections, he can make deals. That was the whole reason I voted for him, is, you know, rather than just being given people, he had been through one presidency, he could see what's going on and say, all right, let's try to bolster my efforts here. And I think that obviously people have come and gone from that, but that was at the time, that was a good emphasis,
okay,
that we could vote for. So the big thing that we've seen on college campuses is this emphasis on harassment to us. When we're setting up, when we're going through even just common debate, like beginning like this, we had people flipping us off, blocking cameras. We did a thing at UCLA and we had a group of communists blocking our cameras. So that's only coming from the left, though, obviously, because we're right. But I'm saying in general, they have no clue what we're setting up. Immediately, it's people on the left that are harassing us, harassing people. So you're getting more of that violent rhetoric also from news companies. Would you disagree?
Maybe not necessarily. I think it would depend on the context where I saw it, like who's protesting you. Mm-hmm. But even if that was the case, like if I granted it, that wouldn't really be surprising to me.
Okay.
And I don't know why you would expect anything different when the leader of the Republican Party right now is the most aggressive, the most piece of, like, shit, asshole, like, towards all of his political opponents. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anybody in politics as aggressive as Donald Trump.
I agree with you. I think that's why there's so much of a populist opinion of him. People, the society at the moment has gotten so split where we actually go for populism at this point. We like the clips. We like the heated debates, like what we just saw. Mm-hmm. And that's more than just a common conversation. That's more than just a sit-down conversation that develops a discussion. And so why is it that the left, though, it's everybody in common society. It's not even high up. Because Trump, I'm not going to agree on his morals, obviously. I think he's a businessman, and he's a staunch businessman. I don't think that he is the best moral compass for anybody. Like, I wouldn't take religious advice from him, but I'm not looking at him for religious advice.
What are we looking at him for?
Just general business running. I think that's the one thing that, especially in his first.
But he's an atrocious businessman.
Yeah, I guess the difference between the first presidency and now is there's obviously, in his first presidency, it was a big, experiment of what's going on. It's an experiment of what is Donald Trump, and that what is that as a non-politician entering a presidency at such, you know, a rapid rate. Didn't even have a single term, mm-hmm, in like a Senate position prior.
And it was rampant spending, rampant deficit spending. It was a failed response
America's
to COVID. It was
loved spending. Sure. America loves spending.
Well,
that's a huge
Republicans issue. Love spending. Democrats spend in times of crises, but Republicans always spend.
I mean, Democrats do spend quite a bit. I think we see that with they're giving millions of dollars to companies and things out of like Africa that's not where the money needs to be going at that time.
So millions is inconsequential. This is part of USAID, so you can argue that it's part of an overarching mission. But Democrats have to spend in times of crises to bring the country back to normal, but Republicans will just spend for no reason whatsoever. We saw this in the Trump term one, even before COVID, mm-hmm, and then obviously we're seeing it now with the Trump term two. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, the last balanced budget we had was a Democrat. It was Bill Clinton, right?
Yeah, well, that was how many years ago?
30-ish years ago?
Yeah, so I think that's a systematic thing. That's where I come across as, I think that's a bipartisan, where that's just how government works at this point.
Obama comes in after the global financial crisis,
mm-hmm, yeah,
and then and Bush spent a lot because we had Afghanistan and Iraq.
Of course.
Right?
War,
one is a choice,
more, yeah,
one is a response, yes, right? And then after Obama, we had Trump come in and do a huge tax cut, mm-hmm, without pairing it with any spending cuts.
Yeah.
We have Biden come in, who's mm-hmm, now on the back of COVID and October 7th and the Ukraine-Russia war.
Yep.
And then Trump comes in and it's just, we're at war again. Like, the Republicans seem to do these things unprompted. Like, they're getting us into these things, and then Democrats are having to spend our way out of it to bring things back to normal. So I just feel like both sides are not the same here. Like, it would be nice to see a Democrat come in without being on the back of a crisis that a Republican got to preside over in the last couple of years of their administration, sometimes self-inflicted, and then, yeah.
Well, that's the issue that you come into with modern day politics is it goes back even to like the social issue I brought up at the beginning, which is you have these massive swings. It's a big pendulum, right? It's going back and forth. I don't think that's good for America. Because again, I don't know, I obviously don't know what your personal opinion is on like unifying America. Feel free to elaborate on that if you choose
to. I think we should be unified around certain things. I think that there's like, we should have very good, healthy, passionate debate about some topics, but I think some things should be, I don't want to say unquestioned, mm-hmm, but like one common piece of advice I always give, especially when you're talking about large groups of people, is you fundamentally lost something, mm-hmm, when you're assuming that a huge group of people are coming from a bad place.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, you should generally assume that people working at government, lawmakers, the population, you know, are all trying to do what they feel is right, and they're not coming from this place of, I want to destroy the country.
Mm-hmm.
But that message of wanting to destroy the country is a thing that the Republican conservative media have sold to the American public about the left for the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah, well, I think that's the issue with legacy media. I obviously...
But Fox News is so much more aggressive than CNN or Washington Post or New York Times.
I think they're both aggressive in different factions. I think Fox News is very aggressive on their specific stances of the storyline of the day. I do think you look at like some of the roundtables that CNN has held, and you have people talking about just average American citizens as dumb. You know, they're obviously lacking moral emphasis, which I find a little bit interesting that that's a debate that's brought up sometimes. But when you look at that, they're attacking individuals in the country. That's a CNN side of thing, is they're attacking the group of people rather than the system. They are obviously attacking Donald Trump. That's been in the news for however many years now. So that's obviously the commonality. And then now they've started diving into individuals. And I think that's a bad point to take, because then
we can argue that to some extent it's politics, so of course you're attacking the other group to some extent,
of course,
but like the there is no story on the left that's comparable to the Dominion Smartmatic stuff with Fox News. The lying, the coordination between the actual Trump campaign and Fox News, the deliberate attempt to lie, to sell a lie to the American people that the majority of Republicans still believe in today.
Yeah.
The fact that we have undermined our healthcare system so much that we have people that look to RFK as a paragon of health advice while we're having measles outbreaks in the country.
Of course.
These are ways that, like you can argue there might be some fault on the left, but the Republicans have undermined and attacked these systems such that if they would have been behaving similar to how Democrats behave, we wouldn't be having a lot of these problems today. Like, so you can argue the left is not perfect, but I'm arguing the right has like severely messed a lot of stuff up.
I think both sides have messed up. I think it's nitpicking which things matter to you most. But in my rebuttal to your thing about Fox News, CNN does the same thing.
How?
You went
not
from,
even close.
Yeah, no, they do the same thing. They do a big campaign against, you should be looking at your neighbors who disagree with you politically like they're your opponents. They're not. They're your neighbors. Is that not like
the Donald Trump has literally said multiple times that the entire Democratic Party is like the biggest threat, that all of them are radical leftists, that when leftists engage in violence, it's bad and evil. But when the people on the right do it, it's in response to people on the left.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that when Donald Trump comes out and attacks like the left over and over and over again, and the entire party over and over and over again, starts talking about like how we need to have six congressmen executed for treason and stuff, there's just nothing comparable on the left to this. You can look at the response to the deaths of figures. Brian just brought up the Mueller thing.
It's so sad. I mean, I don't like to see presidents.
Yeah, but there's nothing comparable on the left to that, right?
Yeah, no, but obviously you have Trump saying a statement on Truth Social. You go back to the Biden presidency, he wasn't posting half his stuff. It's the auto pen. I mean, it's like...
You think Biden was using an auto pen?
He was. Look at it.
Trump dropped the investigation for that, right?
That's great. That doesn't mean
you know that there's more evidence for Trump being senile than Biden, right?
They're both old men. They're both old men.
But one of these guys
has turned into a geriatric center at this
point. That's fine, but Trump has demonstrated over and over again that he's like incompetent as a leader to lead the country. He's like mixing up the names of states. He doesn't know the leaders he's talked to sometimes. Like, Biden had a bad debate performance, I agree, but Trump has consistently shown time and time again that he's incapable of even having the mind for office. Yeah. Also, you know, I remember, I don't know how old you are, but I remember in 2016, 21. Okay, so maybe, I don't know.
Middle school
at
that time. Yeah,
probably not as much. How many times I heard about Hillary Clinton? I think she had. I think she passed out once outside because of a heat thing or whatever.
Okay.
We heard about this for so long.
Yeah.
What's up with all the weird rashes on Donald Trump's neck, the stuff going on his hand? Like, these are healthcare issues that I've been told time and time again that Biden's senility was supposedly being hidden from the entire American public, which I don't know why they would agree to let him do a debate if they were trying to intentionally hide it. Why is it that the current Republican administration is allowed to lie about Trump's health over and over and over again, and we have no answer to what? Didn't he have like an MRI that he bragged he did well on? Why are you getting MRIs? He brags that he passed three cognitive tests in a month. Why are you taking three cognitive tests in a month?
Yeah.
Like,
well, the U.S. presidency has become a geriatric center.
Wait.
That's why I'm a
hold
fan.
On.
I'm a fan.
I'm
going to
push
like
on this
because
he was mean, and now I'm going to be a little mean.
You can be.
You keep
fine.
Broadening it to the U.S. presidency.
That's just what we're talking about. We're talking
no,
about Trump.
I'm talking about Trump, but there's nothing comparable on the other side.
Well, I'm seeing it at a local level. That's what I'm referring to.
I'm talking
to.
About the presidential level.
Yeah, okay, so now you want to back the presidential level. That's fine.
I'm going to focus. I'm talking about the president. I'm saying that there's nothing in the...
Well, we're flipping back and forth. I'm like, let's pick one and go with it.
Sure, let's pick Fox News.
Okay, yeah.
Fox News...
I think legacy media is bad. That's why
I understand.
We're
but Fox News
is
worse.
Media exists, is we're trying to get what like grassroots missions. I think you can agree with this because I mean
I don't because I think alternative media is even worse.
Alternative media has hyper bias, but that's the point of journalism.
And they're false.
Journalism
they lie about things.
Well, journalism is supposed to be unbiased. It's supposed to be giving facts.
No, it's not. It's just supposed to be.
The heart of journalism is supposed to be unbiased. It's supposed to be giving news. News isn't biased. News is facts as they happen. So that's when you go to a legacy media. It's like, I don't watch Fox News. I don't choose to. I'd prefer to go look. My entire life up until, because I got into politics, like type debating, things like this, and filming, because I'm a film major. That's like what my thing is. I got back up in that in October. So I'm more recent to this. But what I was doing prior to that, when I was just a film student, I was just, you know, going out filming short films, commercials, was I would try to find both sides in U.S. news, and I try to find two sources outside the U.S. before I got an opinion on like a global issue. So, you know, a lot of times there was a good news station out of Australia, there's some in the U.K., where I'm like, okay, these are some third-party opinions, let's average out. The average information is only what I take. I feel like if you're looking at one news source, you're just kind of like brain rotting, essentially, and whatever that is.
Sure,
you're being it's propaganda at a point, isn't it?
We can say that, but the reality is that the conservative media has engaged in so much equivocation, has engaged in so much abandonment of any truthful statements whatsoever, that you just can't find equivalent, like, brain-rotted topics on the left that have captured the entire Democratic Party the same way that Matt Gaetz. For instance, the majority, like 80% of Republicans don't believe in the results of the 2020 election. You can't find that on the left. And that was a lie that was driven by Donald Trump himself.
So what do you think about, like, 2016 Hillary then? It was going up on the little podium thing afterwards and is, like, immediately hinting at suspicion. Then there's the whole Russiagate thing.
Sure, so
and
we
it's
can
like,
talk about...
That was the same thing. We're looking at the same thing on both sides
so we're
a
not,
decade
though,
apart.
But we're not even close to the same thing,
it
right?
It actually is.
So
though, it's
Donald Trump started his huge lie about the election before any result. A year before, he was saying that mail-in ballots were going to be rigged because he knew that Democrats were going to be more likely to use mail-in ballots than Republicans.
Course, yeah.
That was a lie from the very beginning. On the Russia-related stuff, regardless of your position on it, there was a lot of horrible connections between Trump and Russian-affiliated things. Manafort was the head of his election campaign. That was a crazy connection to a Russian-backed, Putin-backed Ukrainian president that Manafort was illegally working for, that he got arrested, convicted for, that Donald Trump pardoned. We have Roger Stone working directly with Guccifer, the guy who literally hacked, who literally was the one who got into the leaked the Podesta emails and everything else to hurt Hillary Clinton. You had the meeting in the Trump Tower that they originally lied about, and eventually it came out to where, yeah, we just want to see if we get information. Like, you have Trump literally on news talking about getting, you know, whoever hacks from Russia, the emails from Hillary Clinton will be rewarded. To say that that's the same lie or whatever that Democrats believed or whatever, which there were a lot of connections there, to say that that's the same thing as Republicans who wholesale fabricated not only the election fraud claims, but then went on to do their own type of, through the weird ECA loop, I don't even want to say loophole, they were trying to fabricate their own elector certificates to win that election. It's not even remotely comparable.
Yeah, well, I think the big issue that at least I as an American prioritize is I think the government is a failed system at the moment. Like, not that we need to replace the entire system itself. There needs to be a higher point of checks and balances. But where I see it more, I care more about whenever you and I are having a nice conversation right now. But if I go to any campus right now and try to sit down and have the same conversation, I'm getting like insults hurled at me.
Why?
Immediately.
Well, because what has Trump done to campuses?
So that's
he's trying to deport people that are critical of Israel, right? He was engaged in deportations to try to curb down protests at Columbia and everything else. He's attacked our Ivy Leagues, which why would you do that? These are some of the few things that everybody around the world views favorably.
Well,
as
even
Americans.
Somebody like the great Shabbos Kestenbaum, he's going up there and he's saying, we're going to combat anti-Semitism. It's not good. It's not
sure, but
good
I'm just
destiny.
Saying that Trump is—he's attacked school children. He's attacked like all of these things related to young people. We abolished the Department of Education. Why would it be surprising then that young people would have on college campuses would have a completely negative view of Donald Trump? Like, he's done this himself.
I've never said that I support Trump. That's the catch.
I'm not saying that
that's
you said
saying.
You supported Trump.
Well,
I'm just saying that if you're part of the conservative movement and you're ostensibly supporting him as the candidate, at least.
But they're doing it before we, you know what I mean? We're doing it before we sit down. So that's where I'm like, there is this divisiveness that's happening. Prior, I would say it's because politics are swinging. So my
it's
point
of Trump.
Well, my line of thinking with that is that you see CNN. CNN has led to communities. People who watch CNN immediately think Republicans, people on the right, are like the devil. You know what I mean? That is a thing that has happened because people are watching.
It's happening because people on the right are acting like devils.
No,
I'm sorry, but like
you're in small town America, that's not
let
true.
Let me try to like. There is never
there are bad
been
actors on both sides.
There has
we have
never
to admit
been
that,
no, not the same way.
There are
there has
are
never been a shooter.
Sides.
that has cited Jake Tapper as their inspiration for a mass shooting. There has never been a terrorist attack where the guy was like, I watched Anderson Cooper every single day, and now I'm out here killing conservatives, right? It just doesn't happen.
So I do have a question.
But on the Republican side, you've got people who are not vaccinating their kids because of stuff that RFK has said. You've got people
I'm not
who
taking
are,
medical advice from RFK. That's the catch there, is I do agree that's maybe not the best man in the world to take advice from.
Who is the head of our NIH or CDC, or FDA, CDC? For,
I don't know.
RFK.
He's got a funny voice, and that's what killed his campaign.
Okay, but this is the guy who's literally out here giving us health advice, who's now they've revised the vaccine schedule for children.
I didn't say everybody added in.
That's, I'm not saying everybody. I'm just saying that it's like if I do a drop of water in here versus I flood the room, it would be silly to say, well, in both cases, you made the room wet.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but we're talking about things that are of a completely and totally different scale.
I do have a question, though, because this is something I've been, like, contemplating
Wait.
Recently.
You can ask this question, but I just want to feel
Of course. Yeah.
You lock two people, okay, two separate rooms, and you have to bet your entire life savings and the life savings of all of your family
members. I don't gamble, but
okay,
yeah,
doesn't matter. You're forced to. You're forced to in this case.
Can I gamble your money?
One guy, what?
Can I gamble your money?
If I was your family member, you could. So find a relationship.
Steven, will you be my family member? Please? Can you adopt me?
Yes, because I know you'll pick the right answer here.
Okay, good.
Let's say that one person has to watch 100 hours of CNN, okay? And then the other person has to watch 100 hours of Fox News.
Yeah.
Which person is coming out more radicalized at the end of those 100 hours?
I would actually argue, socially speaking, CNN. If you're talking politically speaking, Fox. That's the difference.
What does socially speaking mean?
So that means whenever you and I sit down to have a conversation, we know nothing about each other, and then we begin the conversation with discourse. That's what I'm saying. The person on the left is going to be sharper. They want to control. The big thing is like the whole pronoun thing. That's obviously old news at this point. But there was that emphasis. Like Canada is a great example of this. There was an emphasis at one point to put the codify in law that if you don't say the right pronoun, that you should be, I forget if it was a misdemeanor or whatever their equivalent of it was. But that's what I'm saying. They want to control speech on the left. The right, in the majority of America, you're going to have bad actors on both sides. But what I'm saying is in the majority of America, people on the right are religious, small town people. They don't automatically, like, I don't hate you for a different political.
So then I'm just
opinion,
trying to find out
I mean?
For the, I'm just trying to find out for the equivalent. What was the equivalent policy on the left for on the right, states that are implementing like bounties for abortion doctors?
Yeah. See, I think that whole thing is a, this result of this populism. It gets clicks
on
and that's,
the right.
That's what I'm saying. No, that's what I'm saying. Is that that's what?
But that's like a pretty radical,
into.
Crazy thing.
I don't
right?
agree with it. I don't think
I'm not asking you to agree
balance.
With it. I'm just saying that it's so. Like, I don't know any laws about pronouns in the United States. I don't think they ever made those.
No, but that was an open discussion in places like California and in some of the
an
more
open
liberal.
Discussion in the blue and some of our bluest states. But do you see that? But there's a
that's
difference.
That's a concern, though, in America.
That's can be a
right?
concern. But on the right, they've already made these laws. On the left, what's the equivalent to now? You have to show an ID online for it to scan your face or whatever while you're jerking off to porn. You got to show like
I don't watch porn, so that's not a concern of mine.
That's
because,
great that it's not a concern of yours, but I'm saying on the left, it's always these hypothetical issues that conservatives are trying to spotlight and say, look, this might be a problem 30 years from now. Meanwhile, conservatives, like you talk about free speech, what's the equivalent on the left of suing media companies for polls that you don't like? Or the FCC attacking like Jimmy Kimmel late night shows that you say you want deplatformed over and over again on Truth Social?
I don't think, well, that's a part of where I'm like, you need some human decency with the whole Jimmy Kimmel thing. He shouldn't have said what he said publicly. Like
his
he was taking,
true, but
yeah, so that's where I'm like, I come from a perspective of we should try to be cordial with each other. I think we both want what's best for America, but where, you know, it cuts down to is you have people, a majority is now, the loud majority is on the far left, and then you have the far right, and then obviously you have, I don't even know what candidate on the left anymore, but then on the right you have, it's huge, it's Donald Trump, Trump.
My thing is, on the far left, the only reason why we know about the far left is because the right likes to talk about them all the time.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
I think
they'd be absent.
You can see it on like you can see it online because
yeah,
you know,
but
if
online
you post,
in these
if you post
niche
something
spaces.
Like, hey, I just had this opinion on like we debated about it at UCLA or USC or one of these places. Why is half the comment section just like berating that?
Sure, but like when I look at the far
and
left,
that's left. That's
when
not
I look
right.
at the far left in Congress. Mm-hmm. They don't exist. Maybe Rashid Tlaib or whatever, maybe.
I feel like Ilhan Omar, that's
maybe.
Definitely an
so
argument.
So maybe, if you want, maybe your three or four justices.
I would argue Bernie Sanders, but like obviously,
Senator,
like what's he doing at any time?
Four, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
the far right is the entire Republican Party. It's all of MAGA. And
they're
all
of Congress.
I don't
think MAGA's far right. I honestly don't think MAGA's far right because they do sell out to like Israel and some of those. I think that's that systematic. You have it on the left and you have it on the right. And that's where that issue is. I like seeing, it was referenced earlier about the whole Rhino thing. I much prefer politicians who aren't, you know, over the age of 70. I think they're out of touch because, again, retirement funds, they should have retired. I don't know who wants to keep. I mean, it's all about power, right? But
sure, I'm just
I
saying
think
that,
they don't
like,
represent you
when
and
I bring
I,
up
right?
when I bring up issues that the like right has done, there is no equivalent on the left. So I don't think this is a both sides thing. I think that the Republicans have been driving us towards this point. I can't see any equivalent behavior on the left.
No, I see. So the thing I mentioned earlier is they have two different aspects of that push, if you will. So again, the Republicans are more of your wholesale ideology push, and then you have a social pressure that comes in from the left.
Yeah, but you can say that, but there's no. It's not true.
I think
for social pressure on the right, we've banned abortion effectively in like 24 states. Okay. There are people offering this is a social issue, is abortion, kind of, right?
Yeah.
You've got porn ID laws in however many states now, and now you've got this like these are social things that they've actually legislated
the porn
on.
The porn ID thing, isn't that to like try to protect kids?
Sure, they can say that,
so
but it's a social
isn't
thing.
Isn't that a net good? That's what I'm saying, where like I don't think that's the same. That's not some radical thing of saying, hey, we don't want kids watching
Sure, but
this.
What is the equivalent like social legislation on the left?
Well, so there's this whole push for, you see, these extreme, again, it's the language.
But there's
laws.
Not, though.
It's, yeah, there actually was.
Wait, there's not. You say what? There's not, though. Not really, right?
Yeah, you have people in positions of power
no.
actually discussing publicly.
Discussing publicly
it.
Pronouns.
So
meanwhile, on the right, they've
not,
got bills in all these states that have already passed.
Yeah,
they're
two different things. The right's not doing the inverse of that, saying they're not codifying a law that says this can never happen. That's the catch.
Well, Donald Trump did an executive order to try to arrest people that were burning flags.
I do think that's not very patriotic. It's not American.
That's fine, but that's freedom of speech, right? That's a cultural thing that they try to codify.
Yeah, but there's flag laws. There's flag laws that
have
always
existed. No law against burning a flag. And I don't know if there are flag laws. I think they're like rules or guidelines or whatever. But they're not
rules,
like, you can't be arrested for these. But Donald Trump said he wanted to take away the citizenship or whatever of people.
So is that not like a sort of treasonous act? You know what I mean?
If you want
to
argue that
it
is.
If I want to burn my flag. Also, it's coming from people who are like, I remember in some of the protests that were happening in L.A., if you're an immigrant coming here from Mexico, why are you burning an American flag, the place you're trying to end up? That's my question.
I think that's crazy. I also think it's crazy to be a white person with history in the United States who's trying to overturn the results of the last election.
I think all the previous elections have been fair and honest because of the.
That's fine. Donald Trump and 80% of conservatives don't because of the lie that
Donald
Trump says.
I'm not 80% conservative.
That's fine, but I'm not talking about just you in particular. I'm saying there's a difference between these two sides. You don't have these same wholesale lies. You don't have the same legislative pushes that Republicans are doing that they do. It's just happening on the left. The most you can say is like some people in positions of power are having conversations about it. That's a lot different than we're looking at the SAVE Act right now, where the federal government is trying to usurp even more authority from the states for election stuff because Trump. Yeah. Probably wants to try to rig the election.
I don't think he wants to rig the election because just logically speaking, that's a bad look when everyone's looking at the fact that the election.
You know what else is a bad look?
Is
$5.80 a gallon, but it's not stopping
Dude,
Trump
gas,
from the.
Gas is ridiculous. It's been ridiculous in both presidencies.
No, come on.
It was under Biden. Are
Why?
You kidding me? I don't know the specifics to that. That's what I'm
we
saying.
We had
gas
a global supply shock with COVID.
Great, they're both higher.
And then we had, but one was like a response to global
gas
events
be that,
that
high.
Were.
That's my like. That's
yeah, but
my
ones
opinion,
were
you know
large
I mean?
Responses to the global events. The guy that was up here earlier arguing with Brian mentioned like, oh, what did Biden do? He was emptying the strategic reserve. Yeah, because he was trying to keep gas prices down, which is funny. He said that because Trump is emptying the strategic reserve right now.
The
Trump thing is self-inflicted. Biden didn't control Russia invading Ukraine, and he didn't control the supply shock after COVID, where the gas producers were starting to catch up on things.
Well,
I don't support
the whole war mission.
I'm not asking if you listen.
No, that's what I'm saying is I don't have an opinion on the. Like,
I know,
the
but you're saying that
gas.
Both sides are doing the same thing, and I'm saying they're absolutely not. That the right is so much more aggressive on all these things than the right.
The output is the same because there's social and there's the governmental level and then there's social level. If I go outside right now with an American flag on my car, there's a pretty high chance my car gets vandalized in certain parts of it. Yes.
In certain areas. Okay, depending on how many qualifiers you throw on that, maybe. But
no,
like,
no, it's not. There's not about a qualifier thing. If I'm in any left leaning town, odds are my windows are getting blown out. I know people personally that they've gone to just street debates recently and they've had their tires slashed.
Okay, so if that's happening,
like,
that's bad.
Yeah.
But I've seen
on
video. I've
seen
they're not. They're out there murdering U.S. citizens, and after they signed up for ICE, they're out there killing people in Minnesota because they went after Nick Shirley, made a bullshit video that had nothing of fact in it, but that caused ICE to go out there with a $90 billion budget.
So elaborate on that for me, because I'm not completely knowledgeable on that, on what that specifically is. So please elaborate
on what in particular
the murdering
on the Renee Good and the Alex Pretty shootings.
So are those American citizens that aren't?
They're white
ICE
American
officers?
Citizens that were killed by ICE enforcing some kind of.
I don't think murder is good, no matter who you are.
I'm just
so
saying. I'm
like,
trying to compare the two situations. Yeah. We have a Supreme Court that said that you can racially profile people depending on the job they're working at. If you want to question them over citizenship, we've got ICE is apparently being able to be deployed to literally fucking everything. If I need tech support for my stream, apparently I can call ICE now because they're out at the airport doing DHS's job. And you've got videos of them arresting citizens at airports supposedly.
If you're here illegally, I mean that is against the law. You agreed to that earlier, and so it's like that makes sense that they're doing that. makes sense that they'd be at an airport, you know what I mean? At least have some, because you have TSA for security reasons.
I mean, like, does it make sense that ICE needs to be enforcing this type of stuff at every single sector of American society?
When you choose to travel on an aircraft, like, I feel like that's pretty reasonable. If I have to scan my ID as somebody who's never committed a crime, you know, I've never done anything, I feel like they should
scan an ID to get onto a plane. I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like, so why is that so crazy that they happen to have, you know, ICE there? Like, it doesn't need to be like a
well, because
a
I think the way that
them,
ICE
like,
is operating like kind of lawlessly and without warrants, and they have their own judges, so, I think it's kind of weird. I don't think people are okay with that.
That's a systematic thing where it's like with the whole immigration thing. I have a whole separate thing about systematic elements of that.
All I'm saying is, broadly speaking, big, bad, crazy things on the right that are enforced from the top down. Sometimes I'll let people say bad things, or maybe some people are vandalizing a car, I guess, is not good.
No.
But not comparable.
I feel like they are, as an output, as an average American, though. As an average American who's not invested in politics, I'm pretty sure that they are pretty...
I think as an average American who's not invested in politics, I think that you can measure the ways that the right has ruined your life. I don't think a guy in California having a conversation about pronouns is affecting you if you're a rural person in Iowa, Nebraska, Missouri.
If you watch Fox News and they tell you
it's going to ruin your life.
Sure, but that's not my main point in bringing up about the social impact of this. I do think we have a massive issue in America right now with... People can't coexist thing with each other. You have different political opinions. It shouldn't matter. Like, I don't care if my neighbor at my apartment next to me is a straight up communist and wants to kill me. Like, I feel like that we should look at each other as Americans and be like, okay, how can we find a way and work a little bit? That's just the whole reason I'm bringing that up.
I agree with you.
On the left, they're very verbally assaultive with that.
Maybe some younger people are.
It's a good chunk of the younger people.
It might be a good chunk of younger people, but on the right, the president is.
Well, yeah, that's great. The president is really old. You have the next generation coming up. So that's more like
the president is deporting people. The president is deporting people.
But he's illegally. You know what I mean?
Well, not all the time.
So what examples? Go ahead and elaborate on that for me. Like, what's?
Well, I mean, like, there are tons of court orders where they're saying, "Hey, you took this person and you weren't allowed to, and now you need to release this person." And the government either doesn't.
Have they left the country though?
Some of them have. Yes.
How many?
I don't have that number off.
That's why I'm like, I just don't know enough about that to be able to debate that. What I'm saying is,
if the left had been forcing,
you're going to end up in jail.
But if the left had forced some state to adopt pronoun laws, I think you would know about that. But the fact that you don't even know about...
That's a scary possibility that I'm saying the actual lawmakers, it's on their mind. And when they start filling these bills, but I do want to actually ask your opinion about that separately. We can finish this first if you'd rather. But the whole filling the bill thing, where it's they're trying to pass something, they have 9,000 pages in there. My opinion is, let's boil this down one main category of vote. It's got to be in that category.
Because otherwise, maybe you can make that argument, like that. But Trump literally found a way to brand that as a positive with the one big beautiful bill.
Yeah.
So I mean, like,
I don't agree with stuffing bills like that.
Fine, but Trump did it.
He did it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I just don't know. I feel like Trump has failed on all of these things. I think if we had a president under the Republicans that was more similar to Biden than under Trump, I think we'd be doing much better as a country.
Like, similar how?
In terms of rhetoric, it would be a lot friendlier. We agree that Biden was a lot nicer
but
to conservatives.
Wasn't Biden's like entire team like pretty offensively calling out everybody on the right just for breathing?
No.
That's the people that he surrounds himself
with. No.
Yes,
what are we talking about?
You can go back and look. There's so many viral clips that I'm like, oh my gosh, dude, they're having.
That you've seen that's been fed to you by your algorithm that are either.
You can just go look it up. Like, if you go look up any press conference.
So that's not a bias thing. On net, you think there were as many aggressive comments from Biden and his cabinet level officials towards the right.
To the average American, yeah.
Trump's
up there with the whole clickbait thing, which is like, Hillary's a dog, you know, that type of comment. And so it's like,
what is the equivalent comment on the left where Trump was saying that we need to execute six American people in Congress because they made that video saying you don't have to follow unlawful orders?
I don't agree with him.
I'm saying there's no equivalent on the left
for that. That's what I'm saying. I don't morally it might take.
It's not about law. I'm not asking you to agree with that. I'm saying there's no equivalent on the left for that.
Yeah, because Trump's a very special man. It's just
not special. You know, it's being divisive.
That's what I'm saying by special.
But he gets supported by the Republicans when they say that. Look at the response to the death to Charlie.
I don't think the average Republican actually supports that though.
They voted for him a second time, and he says this stuff over and 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 over again.
Think about the congressman
when Rob Schneider died.
Most people don't agree with that.
But Republicans can't get away with this excuse over and over again saying, well, we don't agree with that, when they all retweet it. They all think it's epic. Trump is the most aggressive person.
Do you agree with every single thing Joe Biden did? Because you're not voting on somebody based on their moral thing. You're voting on it based on their output to the country.
Partially it is. This is the leader
that is
of
a
your
part
country.
Of it. That is a part of it, which
Trump
is why...
Trump has monumentally failed on the moral front.
Back in the original primary, me and my family were very big on like Ben Carson, Kasich at the time, when they were coming up through the primaries. And then Donald Trump emerges. And it's like, wow, there's this guy who's not afraid to say no, you know what I mean? And that's just, he's able to like yell at people and say, I'm going to run on my own as independent, that he gains this populist run. That's how he gets elected.
He's also incredibly mean and rude and nasty towards veterans, towards McCain.
Yeah.
He says, like, obviously.
As a person, I don't necessarily need to agree with him being nice to everybody when you're the president of the United States. It, like, if you're going to be Kamala and say, like, we told them no, like, okay, what is that going to do? So it's like, we need somebody who is going to be annoying, kind of rude.
No, we I don't. Why has that never been the case before Trump? Nobody was like, remember when Reagan went to the Soviets and was like, fuck you, Soviets, I hate you. Right? Or remember when George Bush was like, we hate Muslims, right? Nobody else ever did this stuff. Trump is the first one to come out and be this insanely aggressive.
You do know that in negotiations, like, they did not play. Clear back to, like, World War II. No one ever plays nice in a negotiating room when it comes to that type of stuff.
That's fine, but I can go back to World War II or World War I. Because I need results. Trump doesn't negotiate anything.
Nice doesn't equal results all
Trump's
the time.
Trump's meanness doesn't equal results. He hasn't negotiated anything for us.
So wait.
In all of the... He has his pendulum.
Here.
No.
So
there's no pendulum. It's hitting a wall. What has Trump negotiated for the American people, for all of his meanness and all of his meanness? What has he negotiated?
So I actually think...
Has he negotiated anything?
Negotiating tariffs, I think, was pretty good.
He didn't negotiate those. Those are unilateral. It was just from his side.
No, he did actually have discussions to discuss tariffs.
No, he didn't.
Yes, because he walked down the stuff in Europe. Yes.
No, he literally, he put these all on unilaterally. Freedom Day or whatever, Liberation Day was all unilateral tariffs in the United States.
There's another set that he slowly weaned off the percentage from.
Because he got scared because of the bond interest rate.
He did negotiate for
that. That's not a negotiation. If I say, I'm going to kill you, and somebody's like, oh, shit, well, if you kill him, I'm going to kill you. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to do this. That's not a negotiation.
Tariffs aren't, I'm going to nuke your ports. It's like, hey, we're going to put a higher percentage. I don't think murdering and not murdering is not the equivalent there.
I didn't say they were the equivalent. I'm saying when you do action unilaterally.
That's not a good analogy.
It's a great analogy.
It really isn't because they're two different things.
What do you think a comparison is? It's always two different things. That's why it's a comparison.
a comparison has to have some level of
The commonality was that it's a unilateral action that you're back off from when the other side also threatens an action against you. So when you tariff somebody without making any negotiation and they threaten to tariff you back, that's not negotiations. That's you doing a bad thing and then responding to a threat.
Yeah. Well,
like
you
threatening to murder somebody and then them threatening to murder you if you do it. That's a threat and a threat response.
Yeah,
these are negotiations.
But again, we're talking about percentages versus finite, you're killing somebody. That's where I'm like, I don't connect with that.
Okay,
at all.
I'm going to steal $100 from you for no reason. They're like, well, if you steal $100 from us, we're going to steal $100. It's like, okay, I'll only steal $20 from you.
That's
not a negotiation.
Whenever it's based on goods, it's purchase of goods.
What could you compare tariffs to?
So what I'm saying is,
what could you compare tariffs to?
So you compare it to, I'm going to take X amount of your time here right now to discuss this debate. I understand that I might not get anything out of this debate because you might not play the game. But whenever I play the game, I think we can come to a commonality and like achieve somewhat of growth out of this discussion.
But we both agreed to come here.
Yeah, I agreed to come here.
They didn't agree to our tariffs. This isn't unilateral. This is bilateral. I could have skipped this if I wanted to, right? You could have skipped this if you wanted to.
There's no purchase transaction. That's what I'm saying is like whenever we come here, the transaction right now is us both growing as people discussing whatever your personal motive is. So their motive is to sell stuff to us. Our motive is we as Americans, we want to try to get things back here, more jobs, more industry.
Sure, and if you want to negotiate a trade deal, you can do that. Unilateral tariffs are not a negotiation.
So unilateral tariffs are hard? Because again, that's a unilateral thing. It doesn't affect the personal. I'm talking about the ones where he like individually walked down certain countries.
The tariffs on Liberation Day were unilateral tariffs that were not a negotiation.
I'm not referencing. That's a date that you brought up, not me.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's why I'm like, I'm not referencing.
But would you agree that those were unilateral?
If they're all the same percentage of everything like that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then other countries
then
tariffing us. And then us bringing our tariffs down in response to them tariffing us, that's not a negotiation.
It is in a way because you're trying to net
when you say
country.
It is in a way, it's kind of like you're saying it's not.
Well, no, because
it's like,
because
if it was,
it
would
a negotiation
be.
Because you did take and give. A negotiation, you give and take a little bit.
Not that, like this.
Okay, so
nobody does this.
That
who,
is still
like, what negotiations? You said you work for a company. Have you ever just talked to a supplier and you're like, by the way, we're not paying this much anymore, and then wait to see how they respond? No, you go to a negotiating room and then you have a back and forth conversation. You hammer out a fucking contract and then you come back and this is what you do.
Yeah.
You don't start unilaterally threatening people. You're like, I'm not buying anything from you anymore. Like, wait, why not? I was like, I don't know. Figure it out. Like,
I didn't say he was the best at that deal. What I'm saying is he did offer
any deals.
To negotiate. There are some deals, I think, in
what's
the past.
What's the best deal Trump has negotiated for America?
What I'm referencing, there's something in the past. Obviously, I wasn't paying attention to the politics at the time. There were some wins back in 2016, 2020
which
at
wins?
That time where it did grow the economy. We had some big industry come back here.
No, there have been no deals that Trump has negotiated. The biggest one you can point to was the ascension from NAFTA into the USMCA or whatever, the US-Mexico-Canada Joint. But he blew that up now in this term with his tariffs.
Well, again, that's two different terms, two different like styles of things.
What? One style was negotiations and one style was not. He didn't negotiate a second term.
No,
but I'm saying that even the one thing he could have you could have given him credit for in the first term. He blew up in his second term. So how could you even give him credit for it anymore?
People complain about Biden, the fact that people had never heard of like of him during his not heard of him, but like heard from him during his time.
I know. I appreciated that. So, you know, they call them Sleepy Joe Biden because he could sleep at night. I miss that kind of presidency where I didn't have to worry about my Trump making death threats to sitting legislators or trying to conduct war over Truth Social.
Where there's such a divisive thing, shouldn't we be trying to find a commonality that benefits like a
yes, but we can't do that when Trump is trying to attack everybody all the time for every reason.
So that's what I'm saying. It comes from a grassroots level of, you know.
No, it doesn't. It comes from the top down.
So the actual output comes top down. What I'm saying is the motivation to get it to the top, it needs to come from like discussions like these where we sit down two opposing companies. You
okay,
know what I mean?
I agree with like, you. So you would agree we should tell Trump you need to calm the fuck down?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
That's been the whole issue is that it's this big sweat.
But it's not a swing. Yeah. Biden didn't do anything like this.
No, on a political average across the country, yes.
Okay, forget political averages. If we were talking to leaders right now.
I only care about what affects the American people. So that's why I'm like, it is actually a bigger push.
Sure, but I think that the young kids on the left that are reacting negatively are probably reacting to Trump, and the people on the right who are being evil are taking orders from Trump. I don't think anybody's getting radicalized by Biden. Antifa, we're not marching for Biden and Obama, right?
No, because again, that's a social thing, not a governmental. That's where we're splitting that, is that I count those as two different things. I see...
Okay, from a governmental level, Trump needs to calm everybody down.
Yeah, everyone needs to calm
He's
down.
Trump.
There are people who are
Trump needs to tell everybody to calm down.
There's a State of the Union address.
There's
a State of the Union address, and we have people that are out here like, look at me not going. Like, that's not helping anything.
Okay, and you've got...
That's not helping anything.
Mike Johnson is
left.
Threatening to kick people out if they make noise.
I don't think you should be yelling like a bunch of animals in the
You mean
of
like
the
they did
Union.
When Biden did the State
Dude,
of Union?
Both sides are doing
not
it. It's
both
not
sides.
Good.
It's not, what is the equivalent to... was it Boebert who stood up and was shouting at Biden during
yeah,
the State of the Union?
What about Omar yelling and that... forget what her... Tlaib, whatever her name is.
No, this was a lie. I know. I don't even remember
I watched
exactly
it. I watched
saying.
The State
no,
of the
no,
Union.
No, no, when they said something about... Oh, God, I don't remember.
I watched them yell like this. How is that not
No,
because
there was a yell, something like saying he was a Nazi or something, which was not true, but they tried to report it ever. But
they
like,
did yell, is what I'm saying. That
they
should,
might
it
have.
Should be dead silent. We should have some decorum.
Decorum? Exactly. They didn't have it under Biden.
No, that's what I'm saying, is that at a government level, we are seeing a split from what the American people want, and that's where I'm like, we need as American people to be able to unify behind something. Because if you and I can't unify behind a commonality when it comes to topics
that's
A
great.
Through Z.
I agree with you, but it will never happen when you allow the Conservative Party to operate the way they do.
I think, yes, actually it will. Because you, as soon as you get...
We didn't get it under Biden.
Again,
Biden was the most unifying, nice... not cherry-picking. It was a president
no,
of the States for 4 years.
I was saying geriatric is what I was saying. But yeah,
you can call him geriatric. So was Trump. Yeah, Biden was
saying,
way more
sides.
Chill than Trump,
so,
though.
Both
so it's not
sides,
just being geriatric.
Both sides of the government, the massive issue at the moment is they're both pretty outdated compared to the American people. They've been in office for 20-something years. That's great.
That's fine.
They took office before wars, and then now you're in... You know, you had X number
that's
of years
fine,
without
but when
a
we're
war,
saying both sides, we should be able to point to things on both sides. We cannot point to anything for Biden that's even remotely equivalent to Trump.
You can see it in you can see it specifically in the Biden era. You can see it a lot of times with people that he endorsed and then got in. Is you see this especially in vote electorates. Whenever you see their output, it tends to be much more abrasive and harsh.
But by
than
output,
like,
you mean stuff that you're shown on your social media algorithms from right wing news
you can
sources.
Go, I was again at that time. I was just looking up things from both sides. I just got into politics in October. That's whenever I'm like, hey, I want to get into the media side of this.
But then,
let's
what is the worst
that.
Output you can think of besides? The some politicians talking about making pronoun laws that never happened.
On a social level is where I'm concerned.
What is
the
social
the
output that you're looking at that's so horrible?
So, again, people like hurling insults at
hurling
each
insult?
Other.
I would pray for the day where hurling insults is
and
the worst thing that the Americans.
And then attacking cars that protesters have. You see people like swarming the streets, attacking anyone who's even having a different ideology. Like, I understand that, sure, maybe you don't want to like completely go down that rabbit hole of like.
We can go down that rabbit hole.
No, of who's doing what specifically where in the country. You can say whenever the right didn't have control. They did not freak out on a global or a global national level.
They
as
had Jan
much 6.
We had the Charlottesville rally that Donald Trump came out
that's
and
that's a very
both
small
sides
portion of people.
It,
that's
yeah.
not the whole country. You have
the whole country's not out here destroying cars.
There's actually a huge percentage
no.
of people that are violent on the left when it comes
no.
to protests.
It's like less than
my
1%.
My friends go to protests all the time. We edit their videos. I'm seeing people whack microphones. There's lawsuits left and right for assault.
Who was like, the last person that got attacked at a protest on the right?
Literally, anyone that we have at our company that goes around, they all get... I mean, you could talk to, whenever they come back up, you can talk to okay. them more about that because it's their thing, not mine. But it's like, that's the catch. I'm witnessing this with my own eyes. I can say objectively from somebody who just came into politics in October about this, I was a fairly libertarian person back in high school. I was willing to listen to both sides. I was not very big on taxes, that whole thing. So when I look at it from a fairly objective standpoint, what I believe is the left is more violent when it comes to social issues than the right is. And I just think that's where, like, we need to come together as Americans.
Well, because
say,
I think, because,
hey, let's count, okay, let's make our fellow American accountable.
I understand what you're saying. I wish you guys had this energy for Donald Trump, but I don't think you ever will. So I will see what the next election
I hope
looks
another
like.
Candidate. I really do. I really hope there's another candidate.
Yeah, but if it was Trump, you'd vote for him again.
I wouldn't, probably.
For a third term? You don't think
no.
you would?
Well, I wonder. Let's say he wasn't his third term. Let's say it was a second term. You know what I mean? Like a normal, like, let's say he didn't run before the first time.
Do you support Nikki Haley or DeSantis over Trump?
No.
Then why would you think you'd vote for anybody else?
I would vote for somebody. Again, I was a big fan of.
Wait, real quick. Do you think that Kamala would be a better president if we would have had her for a year and a half than Trump?
I
right
think
now?
We would have like different issues that were bigger. I actually do.
It would have been worse. Do you think that Nikki Haley would have been worse than Donald Trump?
I think Nikki Haley would have been war.
Do you think DeSantis would have been worse than Donald Trump?
DeSantis would have been a more annoying Donald Trump. I think they actually would have about the same output.
Okay, so then you support Donald Trump. So nothing is even worse than Donald Trump. It's not all these historically crazy Trump things don't even matter.
I'm a very big. I would entertain. Personally, I would entertain somebody like Ben Carson. I would entertain. I don't have a full opinion of Vivek Ramaswamy yet. He's a billionaire, so like obviously there's going to be some influence
sure,
there.
Sure,
but I like
running.
The way he talks. I like the way that he has ideas about business, about how to run a country. I think those some of from that campaign. I very much as an American connected to what his like end goal was. Obviously, we never saw how that played out. So,
all right,
that's where I'm like, well, I actually would support one of those more.
Okay. Well, hey, listen, I appreciate the conversation,
dude. I love it. It's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Yeah.